All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. Yeah, baby, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We are here till 5 a.m., and Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Tuesday morning. Coming up in just a few minutes, our good friend Jim Ryan is going to join us. He writes about music for Forbes, the Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. And we got a bunch of stuff to talk about music-wise and otherwise with Jim. And we're going to play a round of Music IQ with Jim. We did it the last time he won. Didn't he win, Dan?
I can't remember. It was between you and him. I know that for sure.
Well, yeah, because you kept getting all those jazz questions for some reason, randomly chosen. But Jim, by the way, he's in the PPG Paints green room right now, hanging out in the beautiful PPG Paints green room, and we'll get him in here in just a few minutes, live in studio to talk music and all kinds of cool stuff. Also joining us a little bit later on is Matthew Hoffman. He's the programmer of the Pickwick Theater Classic Film Series. He does great work out there in Park Ridge at the beautiful Pickwick Theater. And he will be hosting two screenings of Miracle on 34th Street tomorrow, Wednesday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon for a lovely matinee, and then at 7:30 p.m. with a bunch of bells and whistles. And it's the original Miracle on 34th Street from 1947, a tremendous movie. And you get to see it on the big screen in the newly renovated Big Pickwick Theater. That's coming up as well. We'll talk with Matthew. And we're going to get into some TV commercial stuff, like weird mascots from TV commercials and weird TV commercials from the past and present. And so our phone number for talk and text anytime you want to jump in is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. But the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And also subscribe to our podcasts. Every second of our show is podcast every morning. And you can subscribe, go to iTunes or where you get your podcasts. It's free. They will automatically be sent to your device and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's what's happening this Tuesday morning. Again, get your two for Tuesday requests in. Yeah. 312-981-7200. All right. Let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagrew. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you,
sir? All right, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. By the way, excited that the Robert Zemeckis interview will be played back tomorrow morning during the show. And it was great meeting him and interviewing him. It was an honor. Guy's a true hero of mine. So, and he was all over the city today.
Oh yeah,
yesterday I should say. He and Carell came to town.
Oh nice.
And they did press all over. They were on Roe Show yesterday. I just saw them everywhere. They were so doing a lot of press for what is a great movie. Welcome to Marwin, which opens on Friday, and again I'm hosting a screening of it at 7:10 on Saturday night at the AMC Rosemont 18. I'm going to introduce the movie. We can talk about it afterwards. It'll be like a film club thing, but with a movie that's actually out in the theaters right now. You can reserve your seats now. That's for Saturday night, 7:10 showing, the 7:10 showing. Go to amctheaters.com, amctheaters.com. Reserve your seats, and we'll get together and watch Robert Zemeckis' latest on the big screen, and I'll be there to introduce it. And it's a terrific movie. In fact, I think it's one of the best of the year. So, and that's coming up. I got to start putting my list together of the best and worst movies of the year. Man, already. I was looking at the list of releases. You know, I was going back and looking because I got a full list of every movie that came out in 2018. And I'm like, wow, that came out this year? You know, you think back in time how, you know, like I was looking back and I was like, I totally forgot Annihilation. With Natalie Portman, that fantastic science fiction movie that came out in February. Wow. I totally forgot. I was like, oh, that was this year. So anyway, it gets crazy movie wise around this time of year anyway. So but we're off for the next couple of weeks. So I don't have to worry about, you know, cramming everything in. I can actually at my leisure, bro, if I need to catch up on stuff. So anyway, let's see. It's in the newsroom and that's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
I think I got my plans for Saturday night figured out.
Oh, you should come on out, man.
Absolutely.
Please.
I'm gonna ask Jeannie tonight on a date to that, and I have a pretty good feeling she'll say yes.
It's a 7:10 start, and I'm just going to introduce the movie. We'll watch the movie, and then, you know, some people will stick around, some people won't. Because here's the thing. I was just saying on Patty, when I was talking with Patty, was that for the people who are just, like, generally just ordering a 7:10 showtime for Welcome to Marwin, and then some idiot with a microphone from WGN Radio comes up and introduces
cool.
the movie. They're going to be like, "What's going on?"
I'm not going to miss that. Yeah, that'll be fun.
For the people who were not part of the film club or didn't realize that it was me, you know, introducing it, they're going to get a little extra treat, or they're going to be annoyed. One of the two. So I'm not really sure.
Well, you just interviewed him, so it's going to be really cool to listen to you talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, and I know my Zemeckis, so I can probably work around getting some facts in there that people would find interesting. But it's going to be fun. So yeah, I'm glad. Well, yeah, please come on out.
Yeah, I will.
I hope everybody can come on out. It's the 7:10 showing at the AMC Rosemont 18. It's the brand new Welcome to Marwin with Steve Carell, Leslie Mann, directed by the great Robert Zemeckis. It is a tremendous movie. I've seen it already, and I'm very excited to see it again. My folks are going to be there, too, and it's going to be fun. So come on out, and AMCtheaters.com. You can reserve your seats now, AMCtheaters.com. All right. Okay, well, why don't we take a break, and we'll go grab Jim Ryan, who is in the PPG Paints Green Room, and we will talk music and much more with our good friend Jim Ryan right after we take a break. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 floors above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday, man. Yep. That's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up a little bit later on, our good friend Matthew Hoffman is going to join us. He is the programmer of the Pickwick Theater Classic Film Series, and we're going to be talking about his two screenings tomorrow of the classic original Miracle on 34th Street. You should go out and see that, especially on the big screen at the Pickwick Theater. Right now, though, we want to welcome to the studio our good friend. He writes about music for Forbes, for the Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan, and his name is, coincidentally, Jim Ryan.
How about that?
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Nick.
How are you?
The paint fumes from the PPG studio were getting to me a little bit, but I'm recovering quickly.
Very good, very good. We got a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Including Grammy nominations,
yep.
the Hall of Fame inductees.
They never let us down.
No, they no, they don't, because our expectations are so low.
That's correct.
That's what it is. Tell everybody about how you started writing about music and your interest in that stuff. Just give you a background quick.
Music has been since back in high school, the high school paper, and then through college, and then kind of on and off for a number of bar magazines, the Illinois Entertainer, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Chicago Now since 2011, the Daily Herald since 2015, and Forbes most of this year.
All right. Yeah. Very cool. Very, very cool. You get to see a lot of shows.
I do.
And you're constantly going to concerts, as far as I can tell.
Some good ones, some bad ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
Before we jump into some of the concerts that you've seen, some of the interviews that you've done, and then obviously the Grammys and the Hall of Fame, we got to
sure.
get to that. You saw Bono speak.
I did.
Let's hear about that.
That was kind of amazing. Yeah, that's up at Forbes.com. If you search Forbes in my name, Jim Ryan, you'll find it. But he was speaking to the Economic Club of Chicago, and the idea was that he was going to speak about poverty and AIDS in Africa. He's, of course, founded the One Campaign, which kind of works to end extreme poverty. And then once you're focusing on that in Africa, that really means dealing with the AIDS crisis head on. So he founded the Red
Right.
Campaign, which was, I think, in 2004 and 2006, respectively, on those two. So he was kind of speaking, obviously, to a room with a lot of money in it about the need to kind of fund these campaigns. But it went a lot further than that. He was in conversation with Melody Hobson, who's, of course, married to George Lucas. And they went into the history of U2. They did quite a bit. The final question of the evening, I don't think a major U2 fan would have asked this necessarily, but Melody Hobson was asking Bono what he had learned from a number of people and things. What have you learned from your kids, from your wife, from America? And he would answer all of them a little tongue-in-cheek, and she goes, you know, finally, because he was just buried today, you know, what did you learn from George H.W. Bush? And Bono pauses.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's not, like, this is not a man who's lost for words very often, but he
right.
didn't know how to answer this one. And literally his answer, he goes, I tortured that man. I really did. And he was, of course, referring to his antics on stage during Zoo TV.
Yeah, during Zoo TV, calling for pizzas and calling the White House.
Calling the White House every night.
Every night he called the White House.
Leaving George a message.
Yeah, every night. Yeah, yeah. Boy, that was a weird question to ask.
That was, yeah.
Jeez.
That was the final question of the night.
A nice way to end the evening.
But Bono, in typical true to form, found a way to spin that, because the way he put it was, after explaining how he, in fact, tortured George Bush on a nightly basis, closed with, he told a story that in 2007, George H.W. Bush wound up presenting him with the Liberty Medal in Philadelphia, and he took that occasion to razz him about his tenure as a director of Central Intelligence, and as he put it, probably took it a little too far for the occasion. But he sat down, and Bush totally took the moment in stride and cracked a joke to him about it while the cameras and the mics were off. And Bono's remarks, that was grace and humor could probably get us out of a lot of situations these days.
Oh, there you go.
So there you go. He spun.
Yeah. Yeah, he's Bono.
That's what he does.
That's,
right?
That's exactly what the guy does. But that is again, you know, the fact that it took him a couple of seconds to speak.
It did.
Because Bono, like you said, not a lack for words,
no,
man. I mean, he enjoys talking quite a bit. Well, that must have been a pretty cool evening.
That was pretty impressive. Yeah, the historic Grand Ballroom at the Hilton on South Michigan Avenue. So that was a cool environment to see him in.
Yeah. Now, was it a madhouse there, or
it was I think about 1,000 people. This was one of, I think they do 4 dinners like this annually, so it's open only to members. So that's why he was specifically invited there to speak and kind of impress upon them the importance of, you know, the importance of their dollars.
Right.
It was interesting, though, because he sat down and one of the first things he said in an impression of Warren Buffett, doing it in his voice, was that Warren Buffett, Bono was asked, what do you expect from this room? Or I think that was the question. And his answer was, Warren Buffett once told me not to appeal to the conscience of America, appeal to its greatness.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So yeah. He was on fire.
He's something, that Bono. I'll tell you, man. Okay. Well, that was cool to be in there.
Yeah, that was interesting.
That was very, very cool. What shows have you seen lately?
Bob Seger.
Oh.
Friday night.
Was he at the Allstate?
Allstate Arena. I had not been to a show at Allstate Arena in quite a while.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a long time either. I think the last time I was there, was for a hockey game.
Okay.
The
Wolves.
Yeah, the Wolves. And then actually the last several times I was at that place was for the Wolves. I haven't seen a show there. I mean, you know, I haven't seen a concert there in years. All I've seen there are a couple of WWE pay-per-views.
Yeah, same here. That might be the last time I was there, actually.
Yeah, maybe 3 WWE either Raw or pay-per-views. And some Wolves games.
Okay.
But I've not seen a show. I've not seen an actual concert there in a long time.
I guarantee you were more entertained at the WWE events or the hockey games even than I was at Bob Seger Friday.
Well, Bob Seger's, you know, but he's an acquired, I think he's an acquired taste. I know a lot of my listeners love Bob Seger.
You know what? I like some Bob Seger songs, but he's 73.
Yeah.
I would argue he's lost a step.
Yeah.
This tour was postponed for, I think, like a year and a half, 2 years, so he could have back surgery and come back and do this. He doesn't exactly move quick up there.
Yeah.
He's not a real animated guy. It's kind of reduced to finger pointing and mock flexing.
Yeah.
He played guitar on 3 songs. He played piano on 1. But the Silver Bullet Band, in fairness, is great. 15 people backing him on stage.
Jeez.
So
15 people.
A substantial effort put forth by the Silver Bullet Band.
Wow.
So
wow.
That was good.
The Silver Bullet Band is now an automatic weapon. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, why? What songs by Bob Seger require 15 musicians?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. apparently all of them.
I don't understand.
Apparently everyone does.
Wow. Now, okay, so I'm assuming the crowd was like people my age in their 50s. That would be
very
my
intoxicated
guess.
Yes,
very intoxicated guys in their 50s.
That's right.
That sounds about right. Oh man, you know, but in his heyday though, Bob Seger was the 80s, he was really popular.
This was a sold-out show, and people were crazy into it. This has been a popular trend this year, the Farewell Tour. And Bob claims this is his. And at 73, it could very well be.
Yeah.
But in terms of the voice, he is not a great singer these days. And they tuned, I mean, everyone does this, I know, at that age, but they tuned down so low to accommodate that.
Yeah.
The couple songs where it worked are the ones where he's not singing so much as he is talking.
Yeah.
Which is We've Got Tonight.
Yeah.
Turn the Page. Those were fine.
Night Moves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Closed with that. Closed with Night Moves, I think it was.
Yeah.
But so it wasn't a bad show, and the band was fantastic, but Bob...
Did they have an opener?
They did. Larkin Poe, kind of an Allman Brothers-esque rock band.
That's appropriate for that. So, all right. Well, an intoxicated bunch of 50-year-old guys.
That's right.
Really enjoying Bob Seger.
Bob Seger.
Yeah. I've never seen Bob Seger.
I never had either. That was kind of the appeal for me on this one.
Was to check it. I got to see. I've never seen Bob Seger before. Yeah. That would be my attitude, too, if I was able to swing by and see that. I've never owned a Bob Seger record.
You know, there are songs by him I like
a
lot, and there are songs by him I hate a lot.
Me too.
I hate Kathmandu.
Yep, me too.
I can deal with Night Moves. I hate Like a Rock.
Ugh.
Hollywood Nights is fine.
I like Turn the Page. I think Turn the Page is a cool song. And I'm trying to think of the.
As you say, I'm trying to think of the other ones I hate because there were several of them.
No, there's a lot of. I mean, I never owned a Bob Seger record. I had friends who were massive Bob Seger fans. A guy I worked with at McDonald's when I was in high school was a maniac Bob Seger fan. His name's Larry.
Okay.
And Night Moves came on one night. The store was closed. The McDonald's was closed, and we were cleaning up in the back. You know, in the grill area and stuff, and so there was this big metal prep table in the middle of the back grill area where you would put the ketchup and mustard and stuff on the burgers.
Sure.
And so Larry was in the back doing what we call dives, which is you're basically on dishes. You're basically doing you're cleaning all the trays, you're cleaning all the spatulas and all that stuff. You're basically doing they call it dives,
okay.
Or at least they did when I worked there, and that was like 40 years ago or something. So, So he's back there, and we would take the radio and crank it up when we closed, and we would usually put the loop on or some classic rock station and crank it up so that we could work while we were jamming, you know?
Sure.
Night Moves comes on, okay? Of course, it's the loop, so Night Moves would come on every 45 minutes.
Right.
So Night Moves comes on, Larry comes busting out from the back.
Okay.
Like with the wet apron because he's been spraying dishes and stuff in the back and metal containers and stuff, comes running out, jumps on top of the prep table, which is about 3.5 feet off the ground.
Okay.
Jumps on top of the prep table and sings the song into a spatula.
Wow.
Like word for word, like impassioned, like giving like the most genuine performance that you could possibly give. And it's a memory that I'll never forget. I mean, it's obvious I'll never forget it.
We may have been better off with Larry Friday night than we were Bob. Sounds like he was a little more agile.
Yeah, hit some notes, perhaps. Yeah. Oh, man. But he loved this. Biggest Bob Seger fan I ever met in my life. I'm sure he was there. I have no doubt in my mind he was there. Hang on. We got to take a break, but we've got other Bob Seger. Do you have Bob Seger memories?
No, I was just going to complain that he played Main Street and closed with Rock and Roll Never Forgets.
Oh, yeah. All right, it's not my kind of concert.
Same here.
All right, we'll take a break. The news is coming. You know how many Bob Seger fans right now are pissed off at us? All right, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Later on, we're going to be talking about weird TV commercials, weird TV commercial mascots, and all that fun stuff. Matthew Hoffman is going to join us. He's the programmer for the Pickwick Theater Classic Film Series. He's hosting a couple of screenings of Miracle on 34th Street tomorrow, Wednesday, 1 at 1 in the afternoon matinee, and then a 7:30 p.m. screening of the classic 1947 Miracle on 34th Street. So there you go. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And our guest right now is Jim Ryan. He writes about music for Forbes, the Daily Herald in Chicago now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. We're talking a lot of music stuff here, concerts and things like that. The Grammy nominations came out. The Hall of Fame announced their inductees for this year. And we're going to play a little round of Music IQ with Jim and myself and Dan. And Jim was the victor the last time. the last time we played that game. So that's coming up. We were talking about the fantastic concert, Bob Seger concert that you went to.
That's right.
In Rosemont at the Allstate Arena.
Yes.
And you actually pulled up like the set list that Bob Seger.
I've got the set list from the Roll Me Away, the final tour stop in Rosemont. That's actually what they're calling it.
Okay.
he has a new album out, by the way. Well, new as in it was new when the tour was originally scheduled before they
about 2 years
canceled
ago.
It.
Yeah,
he didn't do anything from it to his credit. But in his defense, there's a heck of a lot of hits here.
He's got a lot of hits.
I mean,
I don't like many of them, but he's got a lot of them.
Still the Same, The Fire Down Below, Main Street, Old Time Rock and Roll, Roll Me Away, Her Strut, Like a Rock, You'll Accompany Me, We've Got Tonight, Traveling Man. Turn the page. You'll enjoy this. He did a tribute to Glenn Frey, who he grew up with in Michigan. They were close friends. Even in a tribute like that, he didn't do an Eagles song. He didn't do a Glenn Frey solo song. You know, the hell with that. We're not working that garbage into the set. He covered Forever Young by Bob Dylan.
Kidding me?
I'm dead serious.
Oh my god.
Unfortunately, he did not do any of Glenn Frey's amazing 80s solo tracks.
Wow. Okay. He could have done The Heat Is On.
He could have done The Heat Is On, and he should have followed it up with his
Shakedown.
Own Shakedown
from the back from the, exactly the right. Second Beverly Hills Cop movie.
The one Seger hit I wanted to hear, he didn't do.
He didn't do that song.
He didn't do Shakedown.
He didn't do Shakedown?
Very disappointing.
I forgot Still the Same. I like that song.
Still the Same is good.
Yeah, Still the Same I like. It's featured in one of my favorite movies of all time in a very integral scene.
Okay.
Which is a movie called Shoot the Moon, which is Albert Finney and Diane Keaton. Best movie ever made about divorce. Let me just say that right now. really great movie. Karen Allen's in it. Peter Weller. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And there's a pivotal scene in the movie where Still the Same is playing very, very late in the film.
Close the main set with Ramblin' Gamblin' Man, encored with Against the Wind, Hollywood Nights, Night Moves, and Rock and Roll Never Forgets. So I don't like
that's a lot
them
of
all,
hits,
but
man.
That's a heck of a lot of hits.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of hits.
Yeah, that's
a lot of
kind of crazy.
And you know what? I mean, the crowd loved it, so God
they
bless
did.
Him.
They
that's good
up.
For him. All right, I just wouldn't go.
roll them away.
Yeah, exactly. Rolling away. Okay. What do you want to do, Hall of Fame first or Grammys first?
Up to you.
All right, let's go Hall of Fame.
All right.
Because I think the Grammy conversation is going to take a little bit longer than the Hall of Fame conversation.
That's probably true.
So the inductees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, well, they announced the nominees earlier, and we talked about that. We talked about the nominees one of the last times you were on and how people could vote. And we remember we were tracking
right.
the voting?
Yeah, yes, we were.
Yeah. Now, so we've got the thing about me, the thing that I'm mad about is that there are some really great artists that were nominees that didn't even
who didn't make it this year. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's before we even talk about all the artists who've historically been snubbed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it always for me it's always Warren Zevon. He's not even been nominated. Warren Zevon has never been nominated, and that's why the Hall of Fame is a bunch of crap, as far as I'm concerned.
And your other big one this year it would be, I'm assuming, Todd Rundgren.
Oh man, yeah. And Devo too. Devo's right.
I was going to say, in addition to Todd Rundgren, here are your artists who did not make it this year, and I would almost argue this list is more impressive than what did make it.
Yeah.
Todd Rundgren, Devo, John Prine, Kraftwerk, MC5, LL Cool J, Rufus, and Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah.
Compared to The Cure, Def Leppard, Janet Jackson, Radiohead, Stevie Nicks, Roxy Music, and The Zombies.
Now, there are some in there that I think deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, clearly there's an argument for Radiohead. There's no question about that. Roxy Music, I think, and The Zombies, they were due a long time ago.
Yeah, I agree with that, too.
So, but, you know, like, Def Leppard, we knew it was all going to, knew that was going to happen.
Bon Jovi, The Journey, selection of this year.
Yeah, so you knew Def Leppard was going to get inducted, for sure. The one of all of these, because, you know, Janet Jackson, she's had a great career.
My only issue with Janet Jackson is, and it's not an issue with her, because I understand her impact on everything else that came out. I saw Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam give an interview where they were giving her a lot of credit for the New Jack Swing stuff that came out after her.
Yeah.
I understand her impact, but I think it's kind of criminal that in the pop realm, which is where I put Janet Jackson,
sure.
that she's in before Whitney Houston.
Oh, Whitney Houston's not in?
Not in.
Mm,
which
okay.
is kind of insane, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But the one that really kind of rubs me the wrong way,
I know where you're going with this,
is Stevie Nicks.
Yeah.
So, and listen, I like Stevie Nicks. I do. And she's in already with Fleetwood Mac.
Right.
Okay. But does her solo stuff...
I don't think I could name you two or three Stevie Nicks solo tracks.
Stand Back, Edge of 17.
Stand Back, yeah. And Stop Dragging My Heart Around.
Well, that's Tom Petty, right, too. I'm trying to remember...
So I understand why they're putting her in.
Yeah. I don't think her solo work merits a Hall of Fame.
I think they're going on influence, and I think they're going on Fleetwood Mac.
Well, yeah, clearly. I mean, but she's already in for Fleetwood Mac. I don't know. Is Lindsey Buckingham in solo?
I don't believe so.
Well, okay. What are we talking about here then?
Yeah.
What is that? You know, they're gonna put her in. They should put Lindsey Buckingham in.
Which on this list are you happiest about getting in?
Probably the Zombies.
For me, I think it'd be the Zombies. I love the Cure. That's just a personal thing.
You know, I like the Cure too, and it's justifiable that they're in that they're in. And Radiohead as well.
I was gonna say same with Radiohead.
Yeah, but I think Zombies and Roxy Music are the two that make me the happiest of the ones that are on here.
The Zombies were trying real hard too. They were rallying for it. I spoke with Colin Blumstone a couple months ago, and some of these artists like Ozzy and Kiss, no, we don't want it. We don't want any part of it. They were going the opposite direction. They wanted it real bad.
Yeah, and they got them. They're in. Good for them. Now here's the question. Let's try and figure this out. Who inducts them?
Oh, that's interesting.
So let's try and figure this one out.
Stevie Nicks will be Taylor Swift.
You think?
Yes.
What's it? Why? Because she.
Because it's a broadcast on HBO and biggest possible names.
They want the biggest possible names.
I didn't actually have a good reason.
No, okay. All right, so you're saying Stevie Nicks is going to be inducted by Taylor Swift.
That's my guess.
Oh, and they sang together at the Grammys a couple of years ago.
See, I didn't even know that.
Okay, thank you, Dan, for putting that into my ear and making me sound like a smart guy, even though I'm an idiot.
I'll say Billy Corgan inducts The Cure.
That's not bad. That makes sense. What about Janet Jackson?
That's very interesting.
Who was that going to be?
Lauryn Hill?
Maybe a younger pop star of today?
Cardi B could induct her.
Oh, man.
I would pay to watch that speech, actually.
Hey, by the way, who's Cardi B's ex-husband?
I don't know.
Oh, he's a rapper.
Oh, okay. I didn't know
this. And they're like separated. She left him. You know, she just had a kid with this, and I can't remember the name of the rapper now. Offset. That's his name? Okay, do you know Offset?
I don't know Offset.
All right, well, Offset is evidently a rapper, was married to Cardi B.
Okay.
They had a kid together. He started cheating on her, so she left him.
Okay.
So Cardi B's at a sold-out, she's performing a sold-out show in an auditorium, and he interrupts the show, comes on stage with a giant cake that says, "Take me back, Cardi."
Oh, wow.
With flowers and pleas with her in front of like 30,000 people.
And it didn't go well, did it?
Did not go well. First of all, you know,
I actually kind of like that.
You know what I'm saying? Oh, I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But you know what's really funny about it is that as I watched it, I found out about this on The Daily Show last night because Trevor Noah had a kind of a field day with it. It was really funny. But he said that the one takeaway from this is that that's a conversation that nobody wants to do in front of people, and the people don't want to have it. We don't want to hear it. The people in the stadium don't want to hear that. That's a conversation for backstage.
Yeah.
But he said the one takeaway that I have from this is, I guess the hip hop community has really bad security.
I was wondering, how did he get out there? Does somebody just not know?
Trevor Noah goes, I could barely get a bottle of water in at a Paul Simon concert. and this guy can walk up on stage with a giant cake? Like, who's working the door there, Cardi? But yeah, so they had some of the footage. Like, there was obviously people were filming it with their phones and stuff,
sure.
And so it was just, you could tell by the body language when he walks out on stage, you see the body language on her. It's just really funny. It's this giant cake.
How about when he walked off the stage, tail between legs?
Yeah. So anyway, but Cardi B maybe. I like that for Janet Jackson.
I'd watch it.
Yeah. All right. What about Def Leppard?
Oh God,
who's that going to be?
The Darkness. How about that guy?
The Darkness. Whatever happened to those guys?
Are they around still? Def Leppard, I have no idea.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know.
Def Leppard. Thinking, Greta Van Fleet would be real easy.
Yeah.
Throw out a young rock star.
And they're really huge right now.
Yeah.
Although I don't think they
have anything to do with Def Leppard.
No, they don't really necessarily. No.
Def Leppard.
That's tough.
Think about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, let's think about it. All right. What about the Zombies? It's got to be somebody. I mean, it's got to be like a legendary British dude, right? It's got
to
be.
Yeah, I was gonna say. They always like to throw the younger guys out there.
Yeah.
Do we have a young psychedelic Brit pop success story these days?
I don't know. I'm blanking out. I'm not doing well on this. Roxy Music.
Yeah, see, that's another one. See, I would argue, okay, the insane music fans I know are the only people I know who like Roxy Music, are the only people who know who Roxy Music is.
Mm.
So they're in strictly on the influence, right?
I guess.
So who do you have put them in?
That's a good question. I don't know. Well, we're betting 1,000 here, Jim.
I think it's got to be somebody who's totally overrated. So who's totally overrated today? Somebody totally overrated needs to put.
Okay, all right.
Roxy Music.
Somebody
in.
Totally overrated needs to put Roxy Music in.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's
maybe Bruno Mars.
Maybe we'll figure that out. Bruno Mars. Bruno Mars should put Janet Jackson in.
There you go. That would work actually.
Yeah. I mean, he's huge and clearly influenced by her.
Mm-hmm.
So. All right. Well, let's think about that. Maybe the listeners have some and who they think they should induct. Def Leppard, Janet Jackson, Radiohead, Stevie Nicks, Roxy Music, Zombies. Who should induct them? So Stevie Nicks, obviously. So we're going with Taylor Swift. That's the only one that we're kind of.
Yeah, I think that's an easy one.
Okay.
I think it's a very easy one.
Right. And she's a big draw and everybody will want to watch it.
Yes.
On HBO. So March 29th.
So we've got some time to think about this.
In Brooklyn, and then it'll be on HBO probably, and it'll be in April sometime.
Yeah, that would be my guess. Do you have any other historical oversights that bother you in the Warren Zevon level?
Geez, I mean, Warren Zevon is the first one that comes to my mind all the time.
There's a bunch to me.
All right,
in the
what do you
metal
got?
World.
Well, hang on a second. Hold on a second. Let's take a break. We'll come back, and you're going to talk about the
historical oversights.
And snubs from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And we're going to do that after we take a break here. Jim Ryan is with us, 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here on a Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday. We'll get that going later. One artist, two songs.
Yeah, man.
312-981-7200. We're going to talk with... Matthew Hoffman about his pair of screenings of the original Miracle on 34th Street tomorrow, one at 1 o'clock and then one at 7:30 p.m. at the Pickwick Theater. We'll get details on that. Right now, Jim Ryan is with us. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We're talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Okay, which is a frustrating thing.
Every single time
we mention the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, we get upset.
We get mad.
and I think justifiably so.
Uh-huh.
There have been a lot of snubs in the past. And, you know, as I've made it abundantly clear that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a sham because Warren Zevon has never even been nominated. And he's one of the greatest singer-songwriters that had ever lived.
Right.
And has deserved it for many years.
Yes.
But there are many other snubs that Jim would like to talk about. What are some of your other snubs here from the Hall of Fame?
Well, I've got a good one here. You know, I said that my problem on Janet Jackson was that Whitney Houston is not in.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go kind of in that same direction here because Ike and Tina Turner are in.
Yeah.
But Tina Turner is not in.
She's not.
She's not in solo. And there's actually kind of...
Stevie Nicks made it solo before Tina Turner did.
That's kind of stunning, actually.
Ridiculous.
I wouldn't have guessed that. But that's the case.
Ridiculous.
Ike and Tina were inducted in 1991. Ike was still incarcerated, and Tina didn't bother going.
Oh,
in Tina's statement that she put out to a publicist, she said, and I quote, that she was emotionally unequipped to return to the U.S. and respond to the night of celebration in the manner she would want. Would you like to take a stab at... Wait, don't take that too literally. Would you like to take a stab at who accepted the award on their behalf?
Who accepted the award on Ike and Tina's behalf?
Yes.
No, I'm not going to.
Phil Spector.
You have got to be kidding me.
I just looked this up during the break. It was amazed.
You have got to be kidding me.
Ike and Tina didn't go. Ike was still in jail.
And Phil Spector
accepted the award on their behalf.
That's absolutely insane.
Uh-huh.
That is absolutely nuts.
But Stevie Nicks is in.
But Stevie... Wow. That's... All right, now, who were some of the other snubs that you thought of? Boy, that's a crazy... That's absolutely insane, that story.
That's something. I think there's a bunch in the... Well, bouncing off Warren Zevon in terms of a fantastic songwriter who's historically underrated, Nick Drake.
Oh, sure.
I think deserves to be in.
Yep.
In the heavy metal community, we talked about, you know, how long it took Black Sabbath to get in. Ozzy still isn't in solo either.
Which is absurd.
Iron Maiden, Motorhead, Judas Priest, none of those three are in.
That's insane.
That's highway robbery.
It is, absolutely. Absolutely.
On the alternative fronts, you know, I'm glad I consider the Cure kind of one of the architects of what became alternative music in the 90s.
Of course.
But so were the Pixies and so were the Replacements.
Oh, yeah, wait a minute. Yes, yeah, so don't even get me started on the fact that the Mats are not. Have they ever even been? I don't even think they've ever been nominated, have they?
I believe they were nominated. But I don't feel like I hear any conversation on the Pixies.
No, that's another great band. Both of those bands should be.
And if you want to talk influence, I mean, Nirvana.
Yeah.
And I think
well, Nirvana. Well, I mean, you know, Kurt Cobain is cop to saying he stole everything from the Pixies. He stole everything from the Pixies. Yeah.
So that's kind of amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
The B-52s kind of on that same alternative realm. I would say in the 80s, they were kind of largely responsible for some of the strange stuff that came out of the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe Cocker.
Joe Cocker's not in the Hall of Fame?
John Coltrane.
Oh, my God.
There's some amazing ones here. Willie Nelson.
Oh, my God.
Graham Parsons.
That's...
Again, on the influence there.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So that's... I mean, there's a lot
Evidently, there's a lot. There's a lot.
And then there's the guys that took forever.
And then Def Leppard is in.
But Def Leppard and Stevie Nicks are in.
Def Leppard is in. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's good.
The Replacements are not in the right. Let me just let me just try and wrap my mind around this for a second.
Tina Turner
not in. The Replacements not in. Bon Jovi is. I just want to make sure.
Is a Hall of Famer.
I just want to make sure I got that straight.
That's right. Tico Torres is to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame what Harold Baines and Gary Carter are to the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and Tico's in, Westerberg's not. I just want to point that out.
He's my favorite one to make fun of every time.
Man, Tico Torres. Well, of course. That's the guy to go to. He's got the name. He's the drummer of Bon Jovi. Oh, man. All right. Well, everybody is excited about March 29th.
A ratings bonanza.
It's going to be huge. It's going to be the biggest. People are just going to start subscribing to HBO for that.
Yeah.
Just for that.
That's right.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I'm not, you know, I will watch it because I watch it every year.
Yeah, it's one of those things, yeah, just like the Grammys, in fact, that I'll hate watch.
Right. Hey, by the way, that's good because we're going to take a break and you just did a segue. We're going to segue right into the Grammys, the nominations and all that nonsense. So that's coming up. But we're going to break here. We got the news. Jim Ryan is with us. By the way, you can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan, and you can read him at Forbes, the Daily Herald, Chicago Now. We will also jump into some of the stuff that he's written about and reviews and things like that and more music things. But we're going to jump into the Grammys after the break and the news, and the news is up next. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday coming up. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Matthew Hoffman is going to join us in a little bit. Programmer of the Pickwick Theater Classic Film Series. He's hosting a couple of screenings of the classic 1947 original version of Miracle on 34th Street. It'll be tomorrow, Wednesday, 1 o'clock for a matinee, and then 7:30 p.m. And we'll give you all the details on that coming up. Right now, in studio with me is Jim Ryan. He writes about music for Forbes, the Daily Herald, Chicago Now. Follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. And let's welcome Jim back. Welcome back, Jim.
Thank you. Yeah, so tweet the Bob Seger complaints there.
So we're going to play a game of Music IQ a little bit later on.
All right.
And Dan, he was the winner last time.
Oh, there you go, Jim. Congratulations.
So there you go. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens this morning. See, you know, if you draw random cards that are all about jazz that Dan has to answer. Yeah, how that works out. So we'll do that
later. We'll jazz-proof the game.
Yeah. So Grammy nominations were announced.
Unfortunately, they were.
Yes, and so we just took on the ridiculousness of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and now it's time for us to take on the ridiculousness of the Grammys. You wrote extensively about this.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your thoughts in general, and then we'll get into some of the specific nominations.
I think the big one right off the top that everyone's going to catch is one of the things that the Grammys were highly criticized for last year was a lack of female representation, not only amongst the winners, but specifically amongst the nominees to begin with. And then as he is wont to do, the head of the RIAA, Neil Port, now who is the guy, the bloviating clown who drags the telecast to a grinding halt every single year with his comments on the state of the music industry, yelling at people who are downloading and just generally sounding like is out of tune as he could possibly be.
Yeah.
His response last year to the people criticizing the Grammys for a lack of female representation, I believe, was construed as rather insensitive, shockingly.
Mm.
So I think the big story this year is that it looks like they have tried to fix that.
Yeah.
Because there are many female nominations, which is great.
Yeah.
And a lot and deserving ones. I mean, Brandi Carlile is up for Record of the Year and Album of the Year, amongst others, and I think that's wonderful because that album is just insanely deserving of any praise that it gets.
Mm, okay.
She's wonderful.
And I'm a big fan of Kacey Musgraves.
She is great, too, yes.
And she's nominated for Album of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think she's terrific. So that was nice to see. How much did Star Is Born get? I know that they got Shallow.
There was tons for Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
I think the Song of the Year, and I think they're up for the Writing Award as well. Both of them.
Right, right.
So they got a lot of love.
Yeah, and I think they're going to get a lot of love come Oscar time, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the movie side of it.
That would make a lot of sense.
And Shallow will be nominated for Song of the Year. There's no question about it in that regard. Well, what are some of the other ones that stand out for you?
Janelle Monáe's fantastic album, Dirty Computer, is up for Album of the Year.
She's in Welcome to Marwen.
And I was very excited about that for about 2 seconds until I realized that she's up against Post Malone's Beer Bongs and Bentleys. And then I realized it really doesn't matter at all.
Yeah. Beer bongs and Bentleys and face tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the Invasion of Privacy by Cardi B. By the way, I Forgive You by Brandi Carlile. Scorpion by Drake. Her by Her. Beer bongs and Bentleys by Post Malone. Dirty
right.
Computer by Janelle Monáe. Golden Hour by Kacey Musgraves. And the Black Panther soundtrack.
Yeah.
Those are the best. Those are the album of the year.
Cool to see a soundtrack nominated for Album of the Year, though.
I'm trying to remember if I've ever seen a soundtrack nominated for Album of the Year, because a lot of soundtracks aren't all original songs.
Right.
Like, they have songs, you know, older songs on there that they would just put on the soundtrack.
I love that, because I also feel like we talked about this a while back, because the Baby Driver soundtrack was so good.
Yeah.
And we had the discussion on the fact that I think those have become so undervalued in the last, I don't know, 20 years or so. But
sure.
In the 90s specifically, there were some fantastic soundtracks, and I'm glad to see we're seeing a couple of them recently. I hope this kind of whole thing starts a new trend in that direction.
And well, this is just an album, though, of all original music. Some of it featured in the movie, some of it inspired by the movie, but all of it original.
That's excellent.
So, that's some, beautiful. I mean, obviously amazing artists on this album as well. And so that's a pretty significant thing right there. And I can't remember if there was ever a soundtrack that was, you want to know what one of the most, you can take this as a good thing or a bad thing, either way, a positive or a negative. But you just mentioned, you know, that there were a lot of great soundtracks in the 90s. One of the most influential soundtracks of all time was the Judgment Night soundtrack.
Okay, sure, yeah. They did a lot of cool team ups.
Right, but then that gave birth to Limp Bizkit and all that other crap. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
So. I mean, on one hand, that soundtrack rules, and they took these two artists and put them together, and it was like sort of hip hop and rock together,
right?
And it was, and I got to say that was like, I think, the beginning of that whole, subgenre.
This always happens when you get something great.
Yeah,
alternative music in the '90s. If you think back to like Nevermind, like the crop of albums that came out in 91, which was like Nevermind and Blood Sugar Sex Magik by the Red Hot Chili Peppers and some classic alternative albums from that era. And to fast forward to the end of that decade and what we had passing as alternative music, I mean, that genre hit a high point within probably 3 to 4 years.
Oh, yeah,
and
then
it was downhill real fast.
Yeah.
And these things, when we get these great fads, they always lead to something horrible.
It's true.
Like nu metal.
Yeah, exactly. Record of the year, I like. How many nominations are there?
would you like to take a guess how many there are?
For what?
Just total, how many categories?
I'm not even going to. I mean, it's like 60.
84.
84 categories.
There are 84 categories.
For the Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because every time we do the, you know, every time we do cover the Grammys on the show, and Dan is kind enough to print up the nominations for me.
Does Cochran seed you the first hour?
50 trees are killed because it's like, 'cause he brings it to me printed up, and I'm like, well, is it, how many 50 trees have been murdered for this? But and there's so many weird categories too.
There's some very bizarre categories. But you had mentioned the original compositions thing, and one of the categories to me that always stands out, especially in the last couple of years for being extraordinarily bizarre, is best traditional pop vocal album. It's literally on the Grammy website, defined about one inch up from the nominees as, and I quote, "For albums containing at least 51% playing time of new traditional pop recordings."
What does that mean?
Okay, so that's the problem, because here are your nominees in the best traditional pop vocal album. A Barbra Streisand live album. There are no new tracks. They are all either covers or previously released Streisand songs. Every track. Does that count as 51% playing time of new traditional pop recordings? Apparently, because they were recorded live in 2017, it does.
Oh, okay.
That's up against Seal's Standards album, which is 10 covers and one original. But since they're newly recorded covers, I guess they count as new traditional pop recordings.
Right.
Also in that category, Tony Bennett and Diana Krall's Love Is Here to Stay. That's 14 George Gershwin covers. We have Willie Nelson's My Way, which is 11 Sinatra covers. Gregory Porter's Nat King Cole and Me, which is 13 songs Nat King Cole wrote or inspired and one original. So there you go.
Okay.
So there's not a lot of what I would call new traditional pop recordings.
Right.
But what a bizarre category.
Very, very bizarre. There's a lot of weird categories. Especially, I mean, if you have 84 categories, there's going to be some weird ones.
Do you know who I blame for this whole covers standards thing, by the way?
Who?
Rod Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
I blame Rod Stewart.
Yeah. The American Songbook
and
stuff.
And how many volumes is it up to now?
I have no idea.
Going back like 15 years, probably?
Yeah. Boy, that's a
that guy.
Yeah, that's a really long way from Small Faces, though. I mean, I mean, that's as far as you can get from Maggie May.
it was a gradual progression over decades, though.
It was, yeah, because I mean, you know, there was a time when Rod Stewart was one of the great rock singers of all time,
and then you get Young Turks, and
that's when it all started to
downhill.
Yeah. Anyway, the comedy album nominations,
yes.
Annihilation by with Patton Oswalt. I watched that immediately on Netflix, and it's brilliant.
Is that the one recorded here, the new one?
It's the latest one.
Okay,
yeah,
it was recorded at the Athenaeum Theater.
Yeah, and it was It was recorded at Athenaeum, and this was the first show that he wrote after his wife's death. And
I watched that the other night.
Yeah. Then we've got Dave Chappelle, we got Jim Gaffigan, we got Fred Armisen.
I didn't even know he had
Stand Up for Drummers.
And literally, it's just the audio recording of a Netflix special, because I did look that up.
And then Tambourine by Chris Rock.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I always check out the comedy album Grammys.
Yeah.
And don't they have Grammys for like best reading?
I mean, I feel like the answer should be yes, just without even having to hear the question.
Yeah.
If it starts with, do they have a category, the answer is probably yes.
Yes.
They do. They have a spoken word one.
Spoken word.
In fact, I can tell you that in the spoken word category, I didn't jot down all the nominees, but I can tell you that we do have a clash of the titans in that category between Jimmy Carter and Questlove.
Now, who in a million years would have thought that those two guys would be nominated in the same category for anything? Questlove and Jimmy Carter.
And we're deprived of the unintentional comedy that in the 90s or the 80s would have been them actually airing that award, because now they won't.
No,
that,
they don't.
That would be in a ceremony that took place before tonight's broadcast.
Right, right. Well, I mean, when you have 84 categories, you're not going to be able to give them away in one night. I mean, right. the broadcast will last 3 days.
The Grammys got way ahead of the Oscars in terms of trying to shorten the broadcast.
Well, the thing about the Grammys, here's what I'll say about the Grammys.
They give out like 4 awards on the broadcast
now.
It's a concert.
It's a concert. Yeah. I mean, that's basically all it is. And, mm-hmm. and you're bound to get some great performances and some terrible performances, but that it's really not an awards thing anymore. They hand out very few awards, and it's all about, you know, the live performances and getting as many different types of music in the show as possible, cramming as many different types of music in the show as possible. And again, another thing, Jim, is they like to team people up that shouldn't be together.
Yes, they do.
You know, they do that all the time. Like
Metallica and Lady Gaga.
Yeah, and which was terrible. Yeah, so, I mean, that's you'll see that. Mm-hmm. Is there a host?
They call those Grammy moments, Nick. we're gonna make new Grammy moments this year.
Right. We're going to come back with some more Grammy moments. Is there a host? Have they announced a host?
I don't know who's hosting the Grammys. I should know. It's not Corden again, right?
Oh, God, no.
Thank God.
No, well, maybe it is.
It was him last year.
Oh, man.
It was definitely James Corden last year because they did the horrible
car thing.
Live
he brought the car out into the was that last year? This
was,
year has gone by. I mean, I don't even. It seems like this year was 10 years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's been
there's
a long
lot.
Year.
There's just a lot of weird stuff going on in the world that feels like it's long. You know what I'm
yes.
saying? There's stuff happening in the world that makes a day seem like a month. You know. So, all right, let's take a break here. We'll come back and we'll talk more about the host is to be announced.
Okay, I was going to say because I Googled Grammy host and got Corden and then realized it was still last year.
It was still from last year. It's to be announced.
That's better than Corden.
Kevin Hart's free.
Yeah, he is.
All right, let's take a break. We'll talk more about the Grammys and Jim's going to stick around after 2:30 and we're going to play a round of Music IQ. Hang on, okay? Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until we're here till 5 a.m. As we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. Matthew Hoffman's going to join us a little bit later on to talk about his screenings of Miracle on 34th Street at the Pickwick Theater that you can see tomorrow, Wednesday. Right now, let's get back to the conversation with Jim Ryan. Writes about music for Forbes, the Daily Herald, Chicago Now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
Were there any other observations about, because we're talking about the Grammy nominations, which have been announced, and the show is going to be on February 10th, and at 7 o'clock on CBS, February 10th.
I think they've gotten a little better about some of the nominations in terms of who they're nominating. I was very excited to see St. Vincent is nominated for multiple awards. But then it becomes an example of how clueless they are when they determine what category she should be in.
Mm.
Because, for instance, her album Mass Seduction is up for Best Alternative Album. And that puts it against Bjork and David Byrne. Okay, that makes sense. The song of the same name is up for Best Rock Song, which puts St. Vincent up against Ghost, Greta Van Fleet, and 21 Pilots.
Wow.
Which makes far less sense.
Yes.
Best Rock Album, we've got Ghost, Alice in Chains, Greta Van Fleet, these are all good, right? Fall Out Boy?
Mm.
I mean, there's these things that they do every year that just make me scratch my head.
A lot of the award shows do that. You know, we were just talking about a couple weeks ago the Golden Globe nominations came out. And the Golden Globes, which are going to be handed out on January 6th, which an interesting choice of hosts. Did you see who he was hosting it?
No.
It's Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that could work.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they always have the, you know, they split the category up and they split the categories up between comedy and drama.
Right.
Except for the supporting performances. And then the supporting performances are just kind of like combined.
What is the reason for that? We don't know what the reason is for that.
No idea. And the Golden Globe, according to the Golden Globes, The Martian's a comedy. I don't know if you remember that or not, but the Matt Damon science fiction drama about him being stranded on Mars is
hilarious.
A comedy.
Did hilarity ensue?
There's some funny stuff in the movie, but it's not a comedy. Okay. And the reason why they put it under comedy is because what the Golden Globes really wants is they want a bunch of stars in that room.
Sure.
So they'll nominate
this
a piece.
This sounds a lot like the Grammy broadcast.
Exactly.
And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame broadcast.
Yes. It's awards in general.
Yeah.
They multiple nominate the movie The Tourist with Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie, just so Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie and by fault, Brad Pitt, you know, they all show up.
Right.
And so that's, you know, there's obviously reasons that some of these award shows do that.
Yeah, that's it just bothers me. And again, I mean, this goes back to you're nominating a live Barbara Streisand album. There were no other albums that fit the description of best traditional pop vocal album. You had to pick a live album. I remember a couple of years ago there was a live Hall & Oates album nominated, and it's just like, why? Like, look,
I'm really? Looking at Rock Performance. When Bad Does Good by Chris Cornell, how old is that?
That's brand new.
Where did they?
It's brand new.
Did they just find it?
I don't know. I don't know what the story is on it, but he does have new recordings out. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's actually pretty good.
I'm not surprised that it's good because it's Chris Cornell. But I just didn't know that he had a. I guess he had a backlog. Then
he must have. But yeah, that is actually new.
Okay.
And Greta Van Fleet nominated there too, so they're jumping right on that bandwagon.
Yeah. Greta Van Fleet, multiple nominations, and they're like the rock band of the moment right now.
Yeah, they are.
So it's not surprising that they got the kind of recognition that they've gotten from the Grammys here.
I just saw them last week, and they did 3 sold-out nights at Aragon. That's about 15,000 people. They could have done one night at Allstate or United Center. I think it makes much more sense to have them get the reps in these smaller venues.
Yeah.
But
I'll tell you what, the next time they come around, they're not going to be playing the Aragon.
They're
going to play a stadium. They're going to be doing a stadium tour the next time Greta Van Fleet eventually comes through. Because I mean, people love them.
Yes,
and you know they get. And it's always a comparison with Led Zeppelin, but I always compare them to the Black Crowes because the Black Crowes should be compared to Zeppelin.
Yeah,
and then you know once removed.
Well, and when you compare Greta Van Fleet, I mean. There isn't a John Bonham in Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah.
And if you're comparing the front man to the Golden God,
yeah,
he's got a long way to go before he fills those front man shoes. He can sing.
I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. And they're a good band. It's a good rock band.
Are.
They're great. I'm not as crazy about them as everybody else seems to be.
Right. Same
but,
here.
Yeah. So, well, there's the Grammys. 84 categories.
Best Contemporary Blues Album, by the way, Boz Scaggs is up for that.
Are you excited? Come on. Boz Scaggs?
Best Contemporary Blues Album.
All right, we're done.
Wait,
hold on.
Best Immersive Audio Album.
What is that?
What does that mean to you, Best Immersive Audio Album? They didn't give me a description on that one, but I can tell you that the 35th anniversary edition of Alan Parsons Project's Eye in the Sky is nominated, and that's exciting. The Grammys. I want a Grammy moment that involves the Alan Parsons Project and Boz Scaggs.
And then the Bulls take the court. All right, hang on, man.
Yep.
All right, Jim Ryan is with us. We're going to play a little round of Music IQ after this break. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's a Tuesday morning. 2 for Tuesday. We'll do that a little bit later on. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, 2 songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up in a little bit, Matthew Hoffman is going to join us. He is the programmer of the Pickwick Theater Classic Film Series, hosting 2 screenings tomorrow, Wednesday, of the classic Miracle on 34th Street and all kinds of fun stuff happening with that. There's a 1 o'clock matinee and then a 7:30 p.m. showing as well. We'll talk with Matthew about that and more. Jim Ryan is with us right now. He writes about music for Forbes, the Daily Herald, Chicago Now. Follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. Jim, thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you.
Hey, before we're going to play a little Music IQ, me, you, and Dan are going to test our knowledge, each other's knowledge on in the world of music.
Yes.
Obviously you won last time because you're the music guest, so that would make sense, right, Dan? That the guy we have on to talk about music should win a music.
You would hope.
Yeah,
I feel like earlier Dan may have been casting some aspersions upon what I can tell you with full confidence was a random selection of jazz questions. I feel like Dan. Were there aspersions cast?
I would never cast aspersions on anyone who gives us an hour and a half of content.
All right.
Yeah, man, we got 4 hours to fill every morning, man. You know? So, you know, but before we do that,
yeah.
what's on the what are you going to be publishing soon? What can people read pretty soon about that you've been writing about?
Before I came in this morning, I posted a fun one at Forbes, which is a Christmas interview with Billy Gibbons. Because as I put it to him, he's got to be in pretty, at the very least, rare air in terms of rock stars who can claim the distinction of having recorded Christmas songs with Lemmy and William Shatner.
Wow. That's something.
Shatner has a new Christmas album out called Shatner Claus.
Of course he does.
And Billy Gibbons plays guitar on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and is in the video.
Wow. So that's worth seeing right there. Uh-huh. So the Christmas Billy Gibbons interview.
And he does that, and then he gives me the recipe to his favorite Christmas cocktail, the Gibbons.
What's in the Gibbons?
The Gibbons is, as Billy put it, in a shaker with ice, combine 1.5 ounces of Reposado tequila, juice of 1 lime, and 1 lemon wedge. Shake to combine, pour into a highball glass filled with ice, top with mineral water, add 2 fresh jalapeno slices. It's cold, but it'll keep you warm.
Wow. There it is, the Gibbons.
Yep. And that's at Forbes.com.
You told that at Forbes.com if you want to read the Billy Gibbons mm-hmm. from ZZ Top. You told that fantastic story about the burrito.
Taco Burrito King.
The Taco Burrito King?
On Cumberland.
The Taco Burrito King on yes. Cumberland. And then they walk in there at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
I love that guy.
Yeah, ZZ Top. That's you know. Mm-hmm. You're not gonna notice if ZZ Top walks into a room.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. You talk with Sheryl Crow?
I did. She was fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't always love her music, but I really love her.
Yeah.
You know, she's not afraid to make some social commentaries in her songs. And she claims that the album she has coming out in 2019 is going to be her last. She's sick of the
really?
Album idea. She's sick of dealing with the labels. She's done. She'll tour. She'll throw singles out when they're ready. She's like, you know, if I'm making a social point in a song, why wait 3 years to put it out when it makes no sense when
yeah.
it comes out?
Oh.
So she's kind of tried to adapt kind of to the changing marketplace toward the single. We talked about her new single, which did really well at radio, which, as she put it, is hard for a 56-year-old female to accomplish.
True.
But St. Vincent is on the track.
Very cool.
Wouldn't Want to Be Like You. It's very good. So right. She was great. Yeah, that's at Forbes as well.
That's at Forbes as well. Okay. Yep. All right. Are we ready to play a little Music IQ? Dan, are you ready?
I am.
All right. So here's what we'll do. I will read the questions to Jim. Jim will read questions to Dan. And Dan, you will read questions to me. We have 5 cards in front of us with a question on each card. We're going to start with the red side, fellas. Start on the red side.
All right.
And I'll ask a question to Jim. Jim, you to Dan. Dan, you to me. So
okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right, we'll start. Jim, you're going to be up first. What British musician dropped out of journalism education to pursue his music career? Would that be Jack Johnson, Ben Howard, or Alexi Murdoch?
Wow. The question one more time?
What British musician dropped out of journalism education to pursue his music career? Your choices are Jack Johnson, Ben Howard, or Alexi Murdoch.
Jack Johnson, I believe, was born in Hawaii, so it's not him. I'm going to go with the second one.
Ben Howard?
Ben Howard.
That's absolutely right.
All right.
He's already off to the races, Dan.
Bravo.
All right, that's correct. All right, Jim's got one right. All right, Jim, you ask Dan.
All right, Dan, what is Damon Albarn's character name in the band The Gorillaz? Is it Noodle? Is it 2D? Or is it Russell Hobbs?
2D.
It is 2D.
Wow.
There you go.
You a big Gorillaz fan, Dan?
Dan is on the board.
I am not, but I just figured process of elimination.
Were you able to see the card over my shoulder?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
as Nick has pointed out, the font is so large on these.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. All right.
Nick.
Yeah.
What is the origin of the term funk? Is it the opposite of blues? The slang funky, which means smelly, or the slang funky, meaning sexy?
Well, I'm going to go the third one.
Incorrect. The slang funky, meaning smelly.
Oh, okay.
How's it going to go smelly?
Yeah, I don't know. I just didn't. I didn't think that that would fly.
Coincidentally, according to the postscript here, it was a racial slur used against African Americans who decided to take ownership of the term and chant their freedom.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, there you go. All right. All right, Jim, you ready?
I am.
Which company used the song 1234 by, is it Feist?
It is Feist, yeah, okay. Leslie Feist.
Okay, Feist. Which company used the song 1234 by Feist to promote one of their products in a commercial? Would that be VW, Lay's, or Apple?
I believe it was Lay's.
It was Apple.
Really? Okay.
Apple used the song to promote the iPad Nano, Mono. See how small this print is? I can't even... And by the way, as you know, Dan, the little extra tidbit's even smaller than the rest of the card. The commercial pushed the song into the top 10 in the U.S.
All right.
Okay. All right. Jim finally got one wrong.
Well, Dan, good luck with this one. Barbara Streisand by Duck Sauce was based upon which song? I'm going to read that again because I had to read it 50 times before I read it. Barbara Streisand by Duck Sauce was based upon which song? Is it Super Trooper by ABBA, All That She Wants by Ace of Base, or Gotta Go Home by Boney M?
I don't understand any of that question.
May I have my options again, please?
Your options are Super Trooper by ABBA, All That She Wants by Ace of Base, or Gotta Go Home by Boney M.
All That She Wants by Ace of Base.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. The correct answer is Gotta Go Home by Boney M. And the postscript here is, Duck Sauce is the side project of Boston DJ Armand Van Helden and Montreal turntablist A-Track.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you knew that, right, Dan?
That one, Dan? Of course I did.
That's easy. Ben Everybody
knew it.
Knows that.
Actually, Ben Anderson sitting in on the show this morning, yeah. He knew it.
He did?
He did.
Wow. All right.
So between the two of us, we're forced to be reckoned with.
All right, what do I got here?
Yeah, your question. What sports brand signed a sponsorship deal with rap group Run-DMC, the first of its kind? Was it Nike, Reebok, or Adidas?
Come on, man. I actually got multiple choice on that. Uh-huh. That would be Adidas.
You are correct.
Yeah.
It's almost like they wrote a song about it.
Almost. We're tied now. One each. Kygo, KYGO,
yeah,
broke through in 2013 with a style termed as Tropical House. Where is he from? Is he from Norway, Iceland, or Sweden?
Norway, Iceland, or Sweden?
Yes.
I'm going Sweden.
He's from Norway.
Man.
He's from Norway.
Brutal.
Yeah. So
Norwegian house music.
Yeah. Well, Tropical House, as they termed it. All right.
All right. Dan, which song led Ireland's Sinead O'Connor to worldwide stardom in 1990? Was it Nothing Compares to You, Wannabe, or Wuthering Heights?
Wannabe?
Interesting choices there.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing Compares to You.
Did you know, Dan, as the postscript informs me, that's a Prince cover?
I did know that.
There you go.
Oh, man. All right, Dan, you got that one. Now you're in the lead.
I was going to say, Dan pulls ahead.
2-1-1. Okay.
Who said there's not a hip-hop artist that didn't snatch a piece of Bob Marley? Was it Wyclef Jean, Jay-Z, or Ziggy Marley?
Jay-Z.
Wyclef Jean.
I was going to say Wyclef.
Oh, okay. All right.
He'd know.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Okay. You ready?
I'm in. Let's go.
What is the other passion of Jack Johnson, singer and musician of the album In Between Dreams? Is it cooking, yoga, or surfing?
Say that one more time.
What is the other passion of Jack Johnson, singer and musician of the album In Between Dreams? Is his other passion cooking, yoga, or surfing?
Surfing.
You are correct.
There we go.
You are correct.
I believe he surfs with Eddie Vedder.
Does he?
How exciting.
I wouldn't. Born in Hawaii, Johnson is a professional surfer. He launched his music career to make a decent living so that he could just keep surfing. What's the Point Break?
I was just going
to
say.
What, is he robbing banks now in order to
have any masks we should know about?
He's got a Nixon mask at home. All right.
All right. Dan, another one here. On the cover of the album Abbey Road, Paul McCartney is the only Beatle not doing what? Walking backwards, wearing shoes, or looking at the camera?
Wearing shoes.
That's correct.
Yeah, that was that fueled that Paul is dead thing.
The fact that he was not wearing shoes sparked a rumor about his death.
Yeah, well, yeah, one of many, you know, once that Paul is dead thing started to, you know, like
I have that book, yeah.
The Beatles latched onto it and then just started throwing stuff into the albums and all that stuff.
Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. That was funny. All right.
Which albino brothers both became celebrities in the 1970s, though separately? Was it Edgar and Johnny Winter, Corey Albino and Parson Moody, or David and Oscar Wrench?
It would be Edgar and Johnny Winter.
You are correct. As children, they played the ukulele and performed music by the Everly Brothers on a local children's TV station.
I can't see them playing ukulele. All right. Let's see. Okay, last question around here for before we break, and we'll come back and wrap it up. We're all tied at two. In 1978, Kate Bush became the first woman to reach the top of the British hit parade with a song she wrote herself. Which one? Is it Wuthering Heights, Sweet Dreams, or Smooth Operator?
It's Wuthering Heights.
Yeah, exactly. Well, those are some tricky choices that they gave you.
Smooth Operator, though, that's glad they threw that one in there.
Yeah. All right.
All right, Dan, Without You is a hit by David Guetta and whom? Is it Chris Brown, Usher, or Akon?
One more time.
Without You is the name of a hit song by David Guetta and whom? Is it Chris Brown, is it Usher, or is it Akon?
I'm going to go Akon.
Sorry, that is incorrect. The correct answer was Usher.
Oh, boy.
Usher's fourth album, Confessions, generated four consecutive number one hits.
All right.
Final question. Who was Lucille to B.B. King? His guitar, his mistress, or his touring chair?
It's his guitar.
That's correct.
All right. Let's break.
You had some toughies there, Nick.
Yeah, I know. Didn't I? It's three. I got three. Jim has three. Dan has two.
All right.
We'll take more. Take a break and then more Music IQ after this. All right. We're back. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and coming up the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We're in the middle of a little Music IQ with Dan Chagrou, Jim Ryan, and myself. I have three. Jim has three. Dan has two, correct? And we get back to our music trivia. Welcome back. All right, ready to dive in?
I'm ready.
Okay. Here's a tough one. Who is nicknamed the father of modern Chicago blues? Would that be B.B. King, Booker T. Jones, or Muddy Waters?
That would be Muddy Waters.
Yes, it would be Muddy Waters. That's absolutely correct. All right.
Dan, I've got a good one for you here. The film Bird tells the story of which musician? Is it trumpeter Dizzy Gillespie? Is it saxophonist Charlie Parker? Or trumpeter Miles Davis?
Charlie Parker.
It is Charlie Parker.
Directed by Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Retrace the life of Charlie Parker, played by Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
There you
Great
go.
Movie. Great movie. Okay.
Which singer stated he would rather have a nice cup of tea than sex? Was it George Michael, Boy George, or Elton John?
Wow, it was one of those three?
Wow, that's crazy right there. I'm going to go Boy George.
You are correct.
Wow. Surprising.
Yeah, totally.
Adam Phillips' close personal friend.
That's right. Who said I'm not really a great singer and I don't think I'm a really great guitar player, but those things are two halves. When you put them together, I guess they make a pretty good whole. Is that Bill Frisell? Is it Eric Clapton or Buddy Guy?
Wow. I'm going to go Bill Frisell.
It's Buddy Guy.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me Clapton. Okay.
No, Buddy Guy. You got two Chicago blues questions in a row. Okay.
And I missed one.
Okay.
It's embarrassing. Dan, what did the artist MIA, where did the artist MIA spend her childhood? Was it Pakistan, Sri Lanka, or Bangladesh?
Sri Lanka.
That's correct.
Nice.
Dan's on a roll. Time Magazine ranked the songstress amongst the 100 most influential people in the world in 2010.
Okay. We're all tied at 4. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Finish the following lyric. We can't dance. We don't talk much. We just ball and play. But then we move like... ... pigs on cocaine, cats on skateboards, or tigers on Vaseline?
Cats on skateboards.
Incorrect. Tigers on Vaseline.
The one I was not going to go with.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting.
What is 70,000 tons of metal? Is it a record company, a famous club in Helsinki, or a heavy metal festival held on a cruise ship?
Vince Neil. What were my answers again?
A record company, a famous club in Helsinki, or a heavy metal festival held on a cruise ship?
Helsinki.
Helsinki? No. No, it's a heavy metal festival on a cruise ship. 70,000 tons of metal.
Okay.
All right.
It seemed too obvious.
Okay. No, I understand. Okay. Next.
Which artist was first a poet and novelist before entering the music scene? Was it Leonard Cohen, Bob Dylan, or Bruce Springsteen?
Leonard Cohen.
It was Leonard Cohen.
Wow.
Published his first poetry work at the age of 22.
Wow. Wow, Dan pulling ahead again.
Dan's rolling.
Rolling.
Hey, hey. Which famous music clip features an intro showing the singer in his bathtub? Was it Splish Splash by Harry Connick, When Doves Cry by Prince, or Faith by George Michael?
When Doves Cry.
Correct.
Yes. I've only seen that video 40,000 times. All right. Jazz.
Go.
You ready?
Oh, no.
Which instrument did Dizzy Gillespie play? Was it the flute, the tenor saxophone, or the trumpet?
The trumpet.
That's correct.
Dodged a bullet on the jazz round.
We're all tied here at five.
We are.
Getting down to the nitty-gritty. All right.
All right, Dan, what is the real name of artist Snoop Dogg? Snoop Doggy Dogg, now known as Snoop Lion, but now no longer, I don't think, known as Snoop Lion.
Yeah.
But is his name Marshall Mathers III? is it Tracy Lauren Merrow, or is it Calvin Cordozar Broadus Jr.?
Calvin.
That's correct. Snoop Dogg changed his name to Snoop Lion after converting to Rastafarianism in 2012, but we believe has since changed it again.
No, he's just Snoop Dogg because he hosts the Joker's Wild.
There you go.
As Snoop Dogg. Okay.
Which song led to a legal pursuit against George Harrison in 1976? Was it My Sweet Lord, Isn't It a Pity, or Bangladesh?
My Sweet Lord.
That is correct.
Yes. Yes. All right.
Sounded like the Shangri-Las.
Here we go. All right. Here's where the final question for each of us.
Where are we at?
I am at six. Dan is at six. You are at five.
Okay. I need some luck. What happens if there's a tie?
Nothing.
Okay.
By the way, this is for $40 billion.
Wow.
And a Jeep.
Couldn't just split that?
Yeah. Blue Train is the second solo album of what artist? Miles Davis, John Coltrane, or Thelonious Monk?
Miles Davis.
It's John Coltrane.
Oh, man.
Those jazz questions.
I'm toast.
You're out. Yeah. Jim is not going to take two in a row.
Jazz questions did it again. Dan, what was the first track to be encoded in MP3 format? Was it We Are the Champions by Queen? Was it Ode to My Family by the Cranberries? Or was it Tom's Diner by Suzanne Vega?
So what do you got to go back to?
Options one more time.
The first track to be encoded in MP3 format, was it We Are the Champions by Queen? Was it Ode to My Family by the Cranberries? Or was it Tom's Diner by Suzanne Vega?
I will go We Are the Champions.
Sorry, that is incorrect, Dan.
Suzanne Vega?
It was Suzanne Vega.
Was my future ex-wife Suzanne Vega?
It was Suzanne Vega.
Wow.
The MP3 format compresses music by reducing the amount of information in inaudible sounds.
I stalked her in the 80s. I just want you to know that, Jim.
There you go.
All right, so this is it, Dan. We're tied.
Yep.
So I got to get this right. If not, we have to split the $40 billion and the Jeep.
Nah, you'll win. Which country holds the record for most people dancing to Thriller at once? Was it Mexico, the United States, or Sweden?
I'm going to go United States.
Incorrect. Mexico.
Oh, I wouldn't have gotten that. Why would you assume that I would know that?
I actually just saw Thriller, so I just figured it'd be easy. I didn't read the question. I just saw the name Thriller.
Oh, I see. Okay, you just saw Thriller. How's he going to miss a question about the most popular album ever recorded?
Yeah.
Well, Dan, we tied at six. Jim, you had five. It was a close game.
It was right there.
Yeah. All right. Jim, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
You can follow Jim on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan, and he writes on Forbes, Daily Herald, Chicago Now, and all kinds of other really cool stuff. Jim, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And have a great holiday.
You too. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. All right. Jim Ryan, everybody, we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next. And then after the news, Matthew Hoffman is going to join us from the Pickwick Theater Classic Film Series to talk about Miracle on 34th Street. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. Tuesday morning, that means it's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man. It's one artist, two songs. Get your requests in. We'll play them in a bit. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're also going to talk about the weirdest TV commercials and the weirdest TV mascots from commercials, which we'd love to talk about that. And we want to hear from you, too. Right now, though, I want to welcome back to the show Matthew Hoffman. He is the programmer of the Pickwick Theater Classic Film Series, and he hosts all these great film screenings over the year. And he's hosting two screenings of the classic Miracle on 34th Street tomorrow at 1 p.m. for a matinee and 7:30 p.m. for the evening show. And it's at the beautiful Pickwick Theater in Park Ridge, and you can check out parkridgeclassicfilm.com. And it will tell you all about the screenings and the fun things that are going to be happening with the screenings as we welcome Matthew back to the show. Matthew, welcome back.
Happy holidays, Nick. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, yeah. Same to you. Same to you. Very exciting about Miracle on 34th Street, and you got a lot of fun activities planned for that one. Tell everybody about Miracle on 34th Street.
Well, it's one of the truly great Christmas movies. Sort of the one of the great holiday films. You know, Christmas has always been my favorite holiday. I mean, Christmas is actually my middle name, and I mean that literally. It really is.
Wow, Christmas. I didn't know that.
That's what the C stands for. But Miracle on 34th Street is a film that so many people have been asking for. Of course, we're showing the 1947 version, not the 73 version with Sebastian Cabot. But, of course, people who are familiar with the story know that it deals with a department store Santa who believes he really is Santa. And it's set at Macy's department store. And, you know, he brings more business to Macy's, but people start questioning his sanity. And it stars Maureen O'Hara, who plays this divorced parade organizer, Natalie Wood as the little 8-year-old skeptic who doesn't believe in fairy tales, John Payne as the attorney who defends Chris Kringle in court. It's such a wonderful film. It sort of lampoons the whole commercialization of Christmas. And I always remember that opening scene with Chris Kringle, played by Edmund Gwenn, walking down the street, and he corrects a clerk on the proper positioning of the model reindeer in the store window.
Right.
It's just such a wonderful moment. But Edmund Gwenn, a lot of people remember him from the science fiction film Them, made in the 50s, but yes. He won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, and he brings so much charm and just decency to the part. The film won an Oscar for Best Original Story by Valentin Davies, but I believe it was also nominated for Best Picture that year. But it's just an absolutely wonderful film, and we have so much other stuff around the film screening that's going to be a lot of fun. We're actually going to have Santa Claus in our lobby at 6:30 p.m. We're going to have organist Jay Warren perform pre-show music at 7 o'clock.
Right.
And then at 7:30, we're going to have a raffle. We're going to be giving away some Macy's gift cards at 7:30. We've got a cartoon and, of course, the feature film.
That's
so
great.
We've got a lot going on.
That's appropriate that that's appropriate that you're giving away Macy's gift cards. That's completely
exactly. Well, the film deals with the whole rivalry between Macy's and Gimbel's department stores.
Right.
So, but Miracle on 34th Street is a film that I remember. I think I saw it for the first time on Family Classics
with
Fraser Thomas.
Yeah.
But it made such an impact on me. I think the film. I know the film was released in the summer a lot of people don't realize, but it was released in the summer.
Is that right? I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, well, 20th Century Fox had Daryl Zanuck thought the film had a better chance at the box office during the summer when more people went to the show. So they kind of hid the fact that it was a Christmas movie.
Mm.
So in all the promotion for the film, there's not a lot of emphasis on Edmund Gwenn. It was more on Maureen O'Hara and John Payne, playing it up as a romance and downplaying the Christmas aspect. But it was such a hit that it played for like 6 months in the theater all the way up until Christmas. And it's going to be a lot of fun presenting this in our new mega theater.
Yeah, how's that going, Matthew?
It's going great. You know, we debuted the mega theater in October when we had Sarah Karloff, Boris Karloff's daughter, for our screening of Bride of Frankenstein. For people who don't know what the mega theater is, we've got this new 54-foot wide screen. We now have a 7.1 channel speaker system, a laser projection. So they really did a major upgrade in the main theater, and all our presentations are really going to look noticeably better, especially the sound.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to showing films that are going to take full advantage of the widescreen, such as the films I got coming up in January and February.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in a couple seconds. But Santa Claus is going to be there at 6:30, correct?
Santa Claus will be there at 6:30, so if the kids want to get their picture with Santa, you know, that's great. We'll have them set up in the lobby. But I think Santa heard about our mega theater, and that's why he was so anxious to be our guest. But it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and obviously the Pickwick Theater is just a beautiful place, and this upgrading that they've done to the mega theater is really wonderful, and we'll make it an even better experience to see these classic movies on the big screen. And again, you can go to parkridgeclassicfilm.com. It's $12, $10 in advance, $8 for the matinee. And your 1 o'clock matinees, now you moved them up an hour because they used to be 2.
It used to be 2 o'clock. We moved it up not only for the seniors, but also the thing is, Nick, a lot of moms were telling me, well, if the film started a little bit earlier, they could then pick up their kids at school. So I thought, well, why not? Let's make it 1 o'clock instead of 2.
So we'll see
how that works out.
Let's make people. We want to make sure people know that it's at 1 o'clock and not at 2. So
the one o'clock
matinee tomorrow, Wednesday, 1 o'clock matinee, and that's the cheaper show. Now Santa Claus and Jay Warren and those guys won't be there for the 1 o'clock. That's all for the 7:30. So then the 7:30 show. The doors will open at 6:30. Santa Claus is going to be there giving away Macy's prizes. Jay Warren is going to perform some prelude music. You get a cartoon and the classic 1947 original Miracle on 34th Street. A great, great chance to see and bring your kids to see this holiday classic on the big screen in a beautiful theater. So that's great. Now, in looking up at your upcoming film series, you're talking about taking advantage of the mega theater. My God, Matthew. Tell everybody about January and February. You are definitely... you've chosen a couple of movies to absolutely take advantage of all those upgrades in the big theater. Tell us about January.
Well, January 16, we're going to be showing The Godfather Part 2. We showed The Godfather last January, and it was such a hit. We had about 700 people, and so many people were requesting the sequel. So,
yeah,
you know, we're going to do this. This is going to look, you know, spectacular.
It is, yeah. I had a huge success. I screened Godfather a few years ago, the original, and had a huge crowd. I mean, that, you know, people love those two movies, not the third one, but the first two.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so many people consider the second one even better.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm really looking forward to seeing it. And then in February 13, the day before Valentine's Day, we're going to be showing Dr. Zhivago.
See, now
I've never seen in a theater.
Oh my God, really?
Never in a theater.
Oh, you're going to go nuts!
So.
It's amazing. It's unbelievable to see on the big screen, and you know, and you've got obviously the venue that you're showing it at is perfect, and that is a movie that Dr. Zhivago is a movie that is meant to be seen on the big screen. So,
yes. And that's my main goal, is to show all these films that are going to take full advantage of that new mega theater.
Yeah. And so now for March, you know, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, you're showing one of my favorite movies of all time, The Quiet Man.
The Quiet Man. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. And then in April, I'm going to be showing for Easter, The Greatest Story Ever Told. Wow. And then a little bit later that month, West Side Story.
Wow.
And then we're going to wrap things up in May with the 50th anniversary of On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And
wow,
we're hoping to have a guest for that show.
That's great. Wow, what a great lineup. What a great lineup, Matthew.
Well, thanks, Nick.
Yeah,
thanks.
Really.
A lot of fun to put together.
It is, yeah. I like programming my film club, too. It's a lot of fun because you get to pick some movies and try to maybe get a theme going. And it's a lot of fun because we're doing, real quick, I'll let you know, we're doing Slapshot in January. We're doing Barefoot in the Park in February.
Nice.
March, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
April, The Man Who Knew Too Much, which is going to be, you know, like Jimmy Stewart back-to-back. And then we're going to back-to-back, Hitchcock at that point. After The Man Who Knew Too Much, we're going to do North by Northwest, so...
Oh, terrific. I'm going to be there. That's a terrific lineup.
Yeah, there's lots of great stuff, man. Lots of great stuff. So, Miracle on 34th Street, two screenings on Wednesday. That would be tomorrow. The 1 o'clock matinee is the cheaper. It's $8. $10 in advance for the 7:30 showing, $12 at the door. 6:30, the doors will open. Santa Claus will be there, and all kinds of other stuff. Jay Warren is going to be performing Prelude music. You have your chance to win some Macy's gift cards, which is appropriate considering they're showing Miracle on 34th Street. And you get the wonderful experience of seeing a classic movie on the big screen in one of the best theaters in the city. So that's Miracle on 34th Street, the original, tomorrow, 1 o'clock and at 7:30 at the Pickwick Theater. Are you planning on going back and doing the library series again, Matthew?
Yeah, actually, in March, we're going to be celebrating our 10th anniversary of showing classic movies at the Park Ridge Public Library.
Oh, awesome.
And I'm probably going to do something like World Cinema, where I profile some of the great international film directors.
Awesome. That's great.
We'll be starting early March.
That's great, man. Well, keep us posted. As always, whenever you have something going on, you're welcome to the show to talk about it because I think you do great stuff.
Oh, thank you, Nick. I really appreciate that.
All right. And you know what? Have a great Christmas, and I will see you in the new year.
Sounds good. Merry Christmas to you, Nick.
Same to you, Matthew. All right, Matthew Hoffman, everybody, programmer of the Pickwick Theater Classic Film Series. He does fantastic work. And if you have kids and you have a family and you want to go and have a special, special experience, there's nothing like seeing a great classic movie on the big screen in a beautiful theater the way it was meant to be seen. So you can see Miracle on 34th Street tomorrow, either at 1 o'clock in the afternoon or 7:30 at night. Get there at 6:30 and you can get a picture with Santa. You can hear Jay Warren play the Miley Wurlitzer organ. And you get a chance to win some Macy's gift cards. So Miracle on 34th Street, check out parkridgeclassicfilm.com tomorrow, Wednesday, 1 o'clock and 7:30. Great stuff. And we thank Matthew for joining us. All right, we'll take a break here on 720 WGN. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Two for Tuesday is going to begin, so get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. Yeah, be a two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So we're going to get into the weirdest TV commercials ever and some of the creepiest company mascots that were used in TV commercials. Which ones do you guys think should be a part of that? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. By the way, you know our good friend Colin Suter, who you hear every Monday morning review the movies with me and Eric Childress. And by the way, the next time that we're on, because we're off for the next couple of Monday mornings for the holidays, we will be back on January 7th. That'll be Monday morning, January 7th, and Eric and Colin will be live in studio for our annual wrap-up of the year, where we will unveil our lists of the best and worst movies of the year, the best performances in all our subcategories, and we always have a lot of fun doing that. But anyway, Colin is now, as you know, our good friend Jim Leskowski's got the Now Playing Network, which is a network of podcasts that cover... and music and entertainment and arts. And Colin Suter has his first ever podcast hosting endeavor, and it's available now at the Now Playing Network. It's a Christmas theme show right now featuring Colin and his girlfriend Carrie. And episode one is A Christmas Story. The debut episode, Carrie and Colin look at the ubiquitous classic A Christmas Story and its direct-to-video sequel A Christmas Story 2. And why does one endure while the other flounders? They also talk about the purpose of the show, their own holiday memories, and what constitutes a film that has knit ability. Christmas Story 2 from 2012. Dan, did you see Christmas Story 2?
I did not.
I did not either. Who's? Can you look it up for me? I want to know who's in it. I knew it existed, but I've never seen it. Now, I saw the follow-up to A Christmas Story was My Summer Story, which was that was sort of like an official Gene Shepard follow-up, but it wasn't, you know, it was just based on a different story by Gene Shepard as opposed to the one that A Christmas Story is based on.
Your cast includes Daniel Stern as the old man, Braden LeMasters as Ralphie, the mom was played by Stacey Travis, and don't
see. So anybody. Daniel Stern then played the old man.
So he was. He seems to be the he's got highest profile actor in it.
And he's got the Darren McGavin role. Who directed it? Does it say?
Brian Levant?
Oh, yeah, he's done some bad movies.
Jingle All the Way, The Flintstones.
Yeah. Yes. From the director of Jingle All the Way. Yet another holiday classic. So anyway, listen in on Colin and his girlfriend Carrie on their podcast. Go to nowplayingnetwork.com and look it up. And you can hear them talk about Christmas Story, Christmas Story 2, and some other holiday stuff. And always support Colin, good guy, and listen to his podcast. You know, Jingle All the Way, Dan. You remember a couple of times I participated in Cinema Slapdown?
Yes.
Which was a thing that Ron Falzone put together at Columbia College. And what they would do is they would screen a movie. It was free. And it was up on the 8th floor or something of the building, or 11th floor, I think, of the building on the south near Roosevelt. And they would screen a movie, and then there'd be a debate afterwards. So one person would take the pro side, talking about how good the movie is. The other person would take the con side, talking about how bad the movie is. There would be a debate. It would be timed. Ron would be there wearing a referee shirt. He would have a timer and a whistle, a ref whistle. And then the audience can get involved, too, so they can jump in. And so I participated one year in December of 2010. I participated in the pro side of Freddy Got Fingered. Because it would be it's much easier to find somebody to do the con side of Tom Green's Freddy Got Fingered than it is to find somebody to take the pro side. So I took the pro side, and because I love that movie. And so they screened the movie, but really nice crowd, screened the movie. And then afterwards, the debate happened, and it was me against five guys from I.O., Improv Olympic. And I killed them. I destroyed them. By the end of the debate, everybody in that room thought that Tom Green was a genius and that Freddy Got Fingered is the greatest movie ever made, and the guys from I.O. were idiots. I mean, I killed them. I did have an ace up my sleeve. I had a videotape exclusively with Stephen Tobolowsky, because he was in Freddy Got Fingered but got cut out. And then I popped that thing on at right in the middle of the debate. Suddenly there's a, you know, right on the big screen is Stephen Tobolowsky arguing for me and for the merit of Freddy Got Fingered. So that was, you know, I don't know if that was fair play or not, but, you know, it was five against one. You had five guys. They didn't even watch the movie. They didn't even stay and watch the movie. They went out, had something to eat, and came back afterwards. I'm like, no, you can't do that. But anyway, I killed them. But then the next year they asked me to come back. Ron asked me to come back as an all-star. And I was on Tim Kazurinsky's team with a couple of other people. And we drew a card, and we had to take the con side of the movie, but we didn't know what movie it was going to be. They sprung it on us. They were like, we don't know what movie this is. You're not going to know what the movie is, but you're going to have to argue against it. Even if you like it, you have to argue against it. So we had the con side. The other team had the pro side. And the movie turned out to be Jingle All the Way. So Jingle All the Way started, and I'm like, well, we got the right side. We're on the right side. But the other team, you know, they did a good job, actually, you know, having a lot of fun with the pro side of that. But Jingle All the Way, oh, my God, what a terrible movie. All right, let's break. We got the news coming up next. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200-773 area code requesting Spike Jones with I'm Getting Nothing for Christmas. So we'll get another Spike Jonze song, Dan, which means we'll get to hear the slide whistle a few more times.
Underrated instrument.
Spike Jonze, known for his prolific use of the slide whistle. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're talking about the weirdest TV commercials ever and the creepiest and weirdest company mascots that have been seen on TV. What would you like to chime in here with? 312-981-7200. The first one on this list, Dan, we talked about before. This is the Sugar Rice Crinkles. And it involves Crinkles the Clown. Remember when we were talking about this mascot before, and then you looked him up, and it was the most terrifying clown ever.
Uh-huh.
Weird black and white commercial. And this leads the pack in both categories. I think this one definitely falls under the umbrella of both categories, either creepy company mascots on TV or weirdest TV ads. Described as, clowns get a bad rap and vintage commercials like this one do nothing to help their cause. Sure, Crinkles the Clown's anticipation and enjoyment of this sugar-infused breakfast cereal seems sincere and innocent, but the vibe of the commercial is unsettling. The stark, cheap, secondhand set, the lack of ambient sound, as if Crinkles is actually living several stories beneath the ground in a padded room. And then there's Crinkles' kabuki-like face paint. Is it any wonder that grown adults harbor a fear of clowns? Yeah, it is. If you've not seen this commercial, it's pretty terrifying. And Dan, we found the audio for it before, right? You found the audio for it before.
Yeah, I don't. Let me see if I can pull it back up.
Okay, because it's pretty scary just listening to it. If you can just picture a really cheap, desolate, scary, stupid-looking set, and a really like creepy looking clown.
Breakfast. I'm hungry. Take it from Crinkles. That's me. The best breakfast under the big top is Post Sugar Rice Crinkles. So crinkly, so delicious, so different. Each grain of rice in Sugar Rice Crinkles is crinkled with honey and sugar. It's so good, I crinkle every time I eat it. Yet, no matter what other rice cereal you've ever tried, you'll love Post Sugar Rice Crinkles best of all. Honey and sugar make it different and wonderful. A circus of fun to eat. So you crinkle on down to the store for Post Sugar Rice Crinkles, the greatest cereal treat on earth.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, yeah, that's not nightmare-inducing at all. Like, and on top of that, like in stark black and white. You know, Dan, like a Fellini movie or something. It's really creepy. All right, we got some calls coming in. We're talking about weirdest TV ads ever and the creepiest company mascots ever. 312-981-7200. Here's Bill from Milwaukee on WGN. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Nick. This is so weird that you're doing this today because I just happened to be at work yesterday and I was Googling weird commercials in Milwaukee.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. And I saw the videos for one of these. They had Vincent Price in his 70s in a kindergarten class with his scary voice telling kids about sandwiches.
What was the product?
Cousin's Subs.
It was a sub place?
Yes. Cousin Subs here in the... You don't have cousins in Chicago?
Yeah, we do. We do.
Yeah. And if you Google it, you can actually see the video. It is so weird.
So it's Vincent Price in a school telling kids about Cousin Subs.
Yes. there are tables in the school.
Wow. Okay. Well, we'll have to look that up. We'll have to look that one
and
up.
The other one was George Takei was in for a GenCon convention, they said. He was in full uniform for the Milwaukee County Transit System, and he did the Vulcan salute.
For the transit system?
Yes.
Wow, you guys have weird commercials up in Milwaukee.
I'm telling you, like I said, I saw these two, and I'm like, oh, my gosh.
That's crazy.
And I thought this was perfect for you today.
Perfect. I appreciate that, Bill. Thank you.
And, Nick, just to tell you that I was on the website, and I finally saw your picture, and you know how you all imagine what the people look like?
Yeah.
Your picture doesn't look nothing like I imagine you.
That happens a lot when you finally see somebody who's on
Reddit.
No, it's
a good thing. I pictured you way different looking and way more professor, like a college type looking.
Oh, no, that's not me.
And you look very neat, and the picture is a very good picture.
Oh, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill. Have a great morning.
Take
care. All right, bye. Vincent Price talking about subs. That sounds fantastic.
I don't have the school kids one, but I do have another one.
Oh, you do? Vincent Price, yes. Hawking subs?
Yeah.
There are some food controversies that even a confirmed epicure might find difficult to resolve. Example, is quality best taken hot or cold at Cousins? On the one hand, you have Cousins' sizzling, delectable cheese steak or delicately seasoned Italian sausage, meatballs in a rich Italian sauce. On the other hand, you have ham and cheese, the classic club sub, or Cousins' own special with Italian meats. Hot or cold, there's a Cousins for every appetite.
You know, here's the thing that's not... It's not weird for Vincent Price to do a commercial for food, because he was a chef. You know what I mean? He spent a lot of time when he wasn't... when he wasn't doing the horror thing... He would evaluate art. A lot of the appearances that he would have on the Tonight Show or other talk shows and stuff, they would have him cook stuff. And I remember one of the times that he was on, he did the thing where you can cook a fish in a dishwasher. You know how you can wrap a fish in foil and put it in the dishwasher with no soap, obviously, and you can steam it. He did that on Carson's show. So at that point, like in the 70s, if he's doing commercials for Cousins, you know, sandwiches, that doesn't seem weird to me, because by that point he had established himself with the public as, you know, as a well-rounded Renaissance man. You know, not only did he act, not only did he do horror, not only did he write, but he was an artist. He, evaluated art, and he was a cook. He was a chef. So and he actually hosted some shows with his wife. Cooking shows. I think he released two or three cookbooks. So by that point, for him to, you know, do some commercials about food, that makes sense. I just thought maybe it was going to be like creepy Vincent Price in a dungeon somewhere going, eat some submarines. Like Edgar Allan Poe era. That would have been weird. Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland, and happy holidays to you and everyone at WGN.
Well, thank you, Mark.
Yeah, anyway, I have a Corvette mascot who I wouldn't describe her as creepy, but she is unique. Are you familiar with the Cadbury Bunny?
The Cadbury Bunny? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let me describe her for people who don't know her. In British commercials, she is this animated, sexy, brown-furred bunny who advises other funny animals to relax, take a break, and have a Cadbury chocolate bar.
Yeah.
And I just think that, these ads are pretty interesting.
Yeah, they're a little strange. They are. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you got The other Cadbury bunny is the one during when they're selling the Cadbury cream eggs, and
uh-huh.
it's the rabbit that clucks like a chicken throughout the whole commercial, because there's that one too. That's a live act, but that's an actual real rabbit that they've did the sound effects to make it sound like it's clucking like a chicken.
Yeah, these ads I'm talking about, they're originally shown only in England,
right,
but they're on YouTube, so yeah.
Yeah, 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 because Cadbury's a British company, and really, a lot of Cadbury's items didn't come over to America, and they were first established in England for many, many, many years. So, yeah. All right, thanks, Mark.
Have a great show.
Take care. All right. Let's take a break here. We're talking about weirdest TV ads in history, creepiest company mascots and TV stuff that that kind of freaks you out. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're going to break here for a weather update. 773 area code. Spike Jones, my birthday comes on Christmas. It's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. It's 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich coming up with the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Yeah, having a birthday on Christmas, man, that must be a bummer. Or like close to Christmas. It's you know what I mean. What do you get? Yeah, well, it's also your birthday present. Your like if your birthday is like the week of Christmas, that's just a bummer. Wouldn't that be a bummer?
I've got four family members in that boat, and we all try specifically go our way not to do it.
Not to do it. It happens. But to celebrate the birthday separate from Christmas, and to give them something more for their birthday, as opposed to just lumping it all together for Christmas. What if your birthday is on Christmas, though?
That's my Uncle Lance.
So. Oh, is that right? His birthday's on Christmas?
Yep.
You know when my future ex-wife, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo, I asked her when her birthday was, and she said it's the worst possible birthday you could ever have. It's January 1st.
Mm.
She's like, yeah, New Year's Day is my birthday. She says it's the worst. It's not. It's the worst. Don't try to tell me there's another date that could be worse than January 1st. So she's a New Year's baby, literally. Born on January 1st. Oh, she's lovely. All right. So let's get back to these weird commercials and the creepy company mascots. Baby laugh a lot. Sure, it's fun and even healthy to laugh. And that's what Remco's Baby Laugh-A-Lot does. Set her on a table, give her a push, and she begins rocking back and forth. She'll start to laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh some more. Suddenly, the nonstop laughter begins to sound malevolent, and the additional giggling male voiceover only adds to the nightmarish quality of this ads. The repeated shots of young girls suddenly turning their heads as if startled by Baby Laughs-A-Lot's psychotic laughter call to mind an especially memorable film performance by a certain child actress. They're saying, a little reminding of Linda Blair turning her head in The Exorcist. Do we have audio for that one, Dan?
Listen to Remco's Baby Laugh a Lot. You're listening to Baby Laugh a Lot. She's the funniest doll you've ever seen. Just push the button and she starts to giggle. Get Baby Laugh a Lot by Remco.
That's terrifying. That's terrifying. And Dan, the visuals, was it black and white?
No.
No, it's in color.
Yes, but still terrifying.
God, that is really scary. What were they trying to do there? Wow. All right. Well, I didn't even see the visual of it, but the audio of that was enough to give you nightmares. Baby laugh a lot. We were talking about toys on the show yesterday morning. Anybody ever have a baby laugh a lot? You could just put that in somebody's room and turn it on and then leave and watch that, you know, and then lock the door behind you and have somebody just be terrifying. Scare the hell out of somebody with that thing. All right, how about this one? John Lydon, also known as Johnny Rotten, in a Country Life butter commercial. You got to hand it to the marketing team for the British-made Country Life butter. Somehow they were able to convince former Sex Pistols singer Johnny Rotten to appear in a series of ads extolling the virtues of their product while taking a few digs at stereotypical British living. The genteel humor for the ad may strike some as a bit weird, given that Lydon is the man who snarled his way through the Pistols' 1976 band hit single Anarchy in the UK. Well, that's pretty funny, getting John Lydon for a butter commercial. Oh, man. How about this? Sony tape. Ah, the 80s. Considering that this was the decade of Max Headroom and the birth of MTV, it makes total sense that Sony would greenlight this straightforward ad featuring a cassette tape being ejected, flipped over, and then replaced inside the toaster like the skull of an attractive bald woman. The commercial has less to say about the quality of Sony's cassette tape and more about Sony being a company on the cutting edge. Of what? Who knows? Maybe their executives just really dug bald women. I don't remember that commercial. They actually put a cassette tape in the head of a bald woman? What does that mean? Okay. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for weird commercials and creepy mascots. Now, when you talk about creepy mascots, Dan, the first one that most people would say would be the Burger King. Would you not agree with
that? Yes, we have two texts on that one.
Yeah,
right there.
And I mean, I personally, I love the Burger King. I think he's awesome. And when they first started doing those Burger King commercials, I was totally on board. My favorite one was the one where they look outside the back door or the window, and you can see the Burger King, like, in the back of the backyard, you know, like 100 feet away. Like, you can kind of see him back there, just standing in the backyard, like for no reason, just the creepy Burger King dude just standing there with like a burger in his hand or something. And then they cut away and cut back, and he's at the door. Like, he's like in a split second, he's like 50 yards away, and then he's at the door. And then the other one where the guy wakes up in the morning. And he opens up he lifts up the shades on his window, and the Burger King is standing outside with a burger. But the first one is the one, Dan, where he's in bed with a guy. Where the Burger King is actually, the guy wakes up and the Burger King is in bed, and the voiceover is like, meat and cheese and meat and cheese. And people, and I remember the first time I saw that commercial, I was like, whoa, okay. I mean, I love it. I think it's great. I think the Burger King is awesome and hilarious. But even, you know, like the first time you saw it, it's a little jarring. Like, wait a minute, what? Like, I remember when I saw the commercial for the very first time, and when it ended, I just kind of sat on the couch going, is that real? Did that just happen? Was that a real commercial? Did I imagine that? Did someone drop acid in my drink? What's going on? But then they continued to make them, he's back again. They pulled the Burger King from the ads for a while. Like, they didn't use the Burger King as the mascot for I don't know how long, but they took him away for maybe a year or so, maybe a little bit more than that. But they've brought him back now. He's back. The commercials aren't as weird. You know, they're not as like, he's not in bed with anybody. He's not creeping around in your backyard. Not creeping around your backyard or standing outside your bedroom window with a sandwich. Now he just shows up and he's like the mascot guy. He shows up and goes, hey, look, the king has gone crazy. It's 20 nuggets for $4 or whatever. And then he's like stacking nuggets. There's now that's as creepy as he gets now. He stacks nuggets. There's no home invasion anymore. There's no creeping around in your backyard. You know, he doesn't bust into your house and sit in your bed with a sandwich. Now he's just in his own place stacking nuggets. So it's much safer. Maybe that's why people aren't reacting as negatively as they did, you know, when he first started while he was, you know, climbing in people's beds and stuff. So he's a safe distance now. So people seem to be happier. All right. Weird and creepy company mascots and weird TV commercials is what we're talking about. Which one stand out for you? 312-981-7200. The news is next. My dad requested this. Paul Simon, you can call me Al. Did he pick another Paul Simon song?
He did, yes.
Oh, okay. All right, my dad calling in for Two for Tuesday. You hear me, Two for Tuesday? Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Two for Tuesday, my dad picking some Paul Simon right there. All right. Welcome back, everybody. It is Tuesday morning. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, as we are every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. By the way, we're leading up to taking some time off here. I will be off from the next week through. I will be back January 2nd. And Dan, you'll be back January 7th, right?
Correct.
So you're taking a few more days off for the holidays. But Dan will be back on January 7th, and that's the night when we come back. That's the night that Eric and Colin will be here for our big year-end spectacular where we go through the best movies of the year, the worst movies of the year, and all that cool stuff. So that's coming up. And I will be gone from Friday will be my last day before the break. But we got some really great stuff coming up on the next three shows for the leading into the holiday break. Tomorrow, we will play back our interview with Robert Zemeckis, the great Robert Zemeckis, the director of such classic movies as the Back to the Future trilogy and Used Cars and Contact, Castaway, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and his latest movie is the brilliant Welcome to Marwen with Steve Carell. Patty and I got to see the movie in a private screening, and then we sat together and we interviewed him together. So we're going to play that interview. So Robert Zemeckis will be on the show tomorrow to talk about his career and his new movie, Welcome to Marwen. And that'll be on the show tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning. So make sure you tune in for that because it's great. And then Thursday morning, we're very excited. Rick Geezer is going to join us for his annual Christmas-themed sports songs. And you know what that means. Honky the Christmas Goose. That's right. It's the annual tradition of playing Honky the Christmas Goose. It's not Christmas time until I hear Honky the Christmas Goose all the way through. But we'll also play a whole bunch of other sports song-related Christmas stuff. So that will be on Thursday morning. Rick will be here. And we're also going to have our visit from Dan Feinberg to talk TV. Lots of TV stuff to talk about. That'll be on the same morning. He'll be on with us after Rick. And then Friday morning, our good friend Jeff Tuckman is going to be here for his monthly visit. We've got some Three Stooges DVDs, an amazing Three Stooges package to give away. And we'll be doing that and answering any and all of your DVD and movie-related questions. And you can't think of the title of a movie, but you can describe it to us or tell us who's in it. We'll help you out with that. And then after Jeff Tuckman, our great friend Esmeralda Leon is going to come in just before Christmas and for the end of the year. We want to have Esmeralda in, and we'll do some quizzes and have some of the fun stuff, the normally fun stuff that we do, and just find out what she's up to. She's also going to be co-hosting with Brandon Weatherby the 10th anniversary of You, Me, Them, Everybody, which will be at the Hungry Brain, and it's the 10th anniversary, and it's going to be on December 27th. She'll be co-hosting with Brandon Weatherby on that. So that's going to be fun, and it'll be great to have Esmeralda. It's always a treat to have Esmeralda. We miss her. We miss having her on the show daily terribly, but we try to have her in at least like once a month or something to get her back into the show. And she'll be in right after Jeff, and she'll be with us through the whole show until 5 a.m. So lots of great stuff. Robert Zemeckis tomorrow, Rick Geezer and Dan Feinberg on Thursday. And on Friday morning, Jeff Tuckman and Esmeralda Leon. And we will celebrate everything leading into the holiday break. So there you go. Okay, our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we're talking about weird TV commercials and creepy and weird company mascots. And what are the ones that stand out for you? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's Rich on WGN.
Hello, Nick. Good morning.
Morning.
Boy, Three Stooges and Esmeralda, you can't beat that.
Yeah?
No, you really can't. I was heartbroken when the announcement was made that Esmeralda was leaving. You guys worked so well together.
Yeah, she's great.
Yep. Well, when I heard your topic, when I turned on the radio, my wheels were turning, and I thought of a few. I'm sure you're on board with a couple of these. Maybe mention them before I turn on the radio. I hope not. But one was a Sponge Monkey commercial.
Yeah, with Quiznos.
Yes, yeah. That's got to be one of the weirdest both mascot and commercials I've ever seen, and I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it too. I was a big fan.
So off the wall. I think I know you're a fan of the Filet-O-Fish one, the McDonald's one.
Yep.
Give me the Filet-O-Fish. That's a pretty weird one too. But the ones that jumped to my mind first were there was one in. I think it was in the late 60s or early 70s. It was a Right Guard commercial, and the premise was an apartment building where a guy, which he shared a medicine cabinet with a neighbor.
Yeah.
They had the same medicine cabinet, so when you opened up the mirror.
He was there. Yeah, no, he was there. Yeah, I know that. That was a series of commercials.
Yeah, and that was really creepy because every time the guy opened up his mirror, the other guy's face was like there already with his mirror open. I think he said something like, "Hi, guy."
Yeah,
right?
It is hi, guy.
Like,
yeah, it would be hi, guy. And then, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of echoed the Burger King dude in your bed, kind of.
Yeah, a bit.
Kind of weird. And the other one that I thought was really, I don't think it was like super creepy when you, at first when you watch it, but when you think about it, it's really creepy. Charlie the Tuna always wanted to be, his whole destiny in life was to be caught and eaten.
Right.
And that's what he wanted his whole life to be dedicated to, and
yeah.
That's what the commercials were. I always thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was a suicidal fish.
That's right.
All right, Rich, thanks.
Okay, Evan, good evening. Good night.
Yeah, bye. 312-981-7200. Yeah, if you think about that, Charlie Tuna is always like, hey, how come I'm not in a can being eaten? He mentioned the filet of fish, so...
Give me back that filet of fish. Give me that fish. Give me back that filet of fish. Give me that fish. What if it were you hanging up on this wall? If it were you in that sandwich, you wouldn't be laughing at all.
I was obsessed with those commercials when they first aired. I thought that was the greatest thing ever. I still don't understand why they don't do those ads again at Lent. I just don't understand it. Because it was just so catchy and hilarious. Yeah, that's one of my favorites. One of my favorite commercials of all time. One of my favorite jingles ever. And like I've said before, we had the guys on who wrote that, and they sounded high. I think the creation of that, if they admitted on the air that the creation of that involved mind altering substances, whether it be liquor or blowing weed. But you know, they have creepy mascots here, Dan. Chuck E. Cheese is mentioned. And that Chuck E. Cheese is not around anymore, right?
It is still around.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Is Chuck E. Cheese, is he still... What were the changes that they made at Chuck E. Cheese? No more booze,
no
right?
No more booze.
Oh, that's what it is. That's what it is. I'm sure parents are thrilled about that. It's like, how are we going to handle this place? We have to be here for 3 hours and there's no booze?
Well, considering the alternative was getting smacked around and beaten up.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not animatronics now. It's a dude in a costume.
Oh, it's a dude. Oh, so it's like a mascot guy.
Yeah.
So it's not robot Chuck E. Cheese.
Right.
That was what the change was. That's the thing that I remember. Now, he's an animated dude, though, right? In the
commercials.
In the commercials, he's like, Chuck E. Cheese is an animated dude, but there is actually a guy in a costume walking
around. That comes out when it's time to sing.
So it's not like the Pirates of the Caribbean anymore. It's an actual...
Right.
Okay. Dan, what is Lips from Dairy Queen? Oh, is that just the logo, the Lips logo?
Correct.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that they had Lips from Dairy Queen. I thought maybe there was a character just named Lips. But then I realized when I said it out loud, because when I read it, I was like, Lips, Dairy Queen, what? There a guy named Lips? Hey, I'm Lips. Enjoy some Dairy Queen. Enjoy a blizzard. Tell them Lips sent you. It's just the logo, because that's what the talking, right? I mean, when they do the voiceover, it's just the pair of Lips.
It's a female voice.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I knew that. I really seriously thought for a second that there was a character.
I didn't recognize until I saw the video that accompanied it.
Lips. All right. That always reminds me of the time I went to McDonald's. When we were over at the Tribune building, there used to be McDonald's right across the street. And when I would do my Saturday evening or Saturday night show, I would always run across the street before the show and, you know, eat something real quick over at the McDonald's. And I went in there, and they were very stingy at that McDonald's. And I think in a lot of fast food places, they're very stingy with their napkins. And I happen to be a guy that uses a lot of napkins when I eat. I go through a lot of napkins, you know. And so I'm standing there, and they're like, at this point, they're just parceling out the napkins. They're, you know, they're not giving out that many. And so there's a guy who comes up. I'm standing there waiting for my food, and this guy comes up to the counter, and he goes, Can I have a couple more napkins? And the guy behind the counter is like, I'm sorry, sir, but you only ordered one item. And you get one napkin. You can only have one napkin per item. He goes, what? He goes, it's only one napkin per item. He goes, but I got two lips. Which I thought was the greatest argument ever for them. You know, one, you can only have one napkin. But I got two lips. I'll never forget that. I swear to you, because I busted out laughing. I was just standing there. And I looked at him and I was like, hey, look, man, you and I are in the same, we're in the same court, brother. Because I need like 15, 20 napkins per item. That's an episode, that was an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm like that, Dan, where he got, where he, because Larry David is another guy who uses a lot of napkins when he eats, or according to, you know, the character Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he ends up like, they was like, you can't have that many napkins. And when the guy turned away, he reached in and grabbed like a giant handful of napkins. And then he gets pulled over by a cop and there's napkins all over the car. And he's like, what do you need all those napkins for? But that's the way I am as well. So, all right. Let's take a break here on 720 WGN. We'll break here for some weather, and then we'll come back. We got some texts coming in, and if you want to call us, it's 312-981-7200. What are some of the weirder TV commercials that stand out and some of the insane, creepy company mascots that are also in those commercials? 312-981-7200. All right, here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, sunny and a high near 46. Tonight, cloudy, low around 32. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy, high of 48. Thursday, periods of rain, high of 44. Friday, mostly cloudy, a high of 36. It's currently 28 degrees at O'Hare. It's 23 at Midway. It's 30 degrees at the lakefront. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Talk and text lines are open. Yeah, getting my dad's request in there for a little Paul Simon late in the evening on 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday, 2 Tuesdays. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We are back, and we're talking about memorably weird TV commercials and some weird, creepy company mascots. You know what? You know what's a weird one? Dan, the talking tree from StubHub. That one kind of, and I guess they call him Ticket Oak. That one kind of freaks me out a little bit, and I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm not because I guess like it's. It's so easy that you can just go to a tree and pick a leaf off to get a ticket. That what's?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
it's weird though. I think that character is weird.
Yeah, very much so.
The Ticket Oak, the talking tree from StubHub. How about Mr. Six from Six Flags? Remember when that? Remember everybody was like, "That's Urkel." When that was like the urban legend, the dude in the old man makeup and the suspenders and the big glasses dancing around. What is that song? What was that? How'd the song go? Because you couldn't get it out of your head. Like when you saw the commercial, and then like for the next the next 4 hours, that stupid song would repeat over and over and over and over on your in your head while you're picturing Urkel. There it is. So what was this like? Early 2000s, late 90s, right? Like late 90s, early 2000s?
Yeah, I believe the artists were the Vanga Boys, if I remember correctly.
That song, I mean, that it was everywhere. And that old dude. Did we ever find out who the dude was under the makeup? Did anybody ever discover who Mr. Six was, actually? Because he was obviously dressed up to look like an old man, but then suddenly the song comes out. He's at Six Flags, and he's got more energy than a 17-year-old dancing around like a maniac. Mr. Six. Let's see. Here's Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Morning, Nick.
Morning.
Yeah, I got a crazy one for you. How about from the early 70s, I believe, Muscle Meal commercial, Crazy Guggenheim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Crazy Guggenheim. Yeah, from the Malto Meal commercials. First of all, that's a great name, Crazy Guggenheim. That is a great name. But yeah, from the old Malto Meal commercials. Those were in the 70s. I haven't seen a Malto Meal commercial in, 35, 40 years maybe. And I know they still have Malto Meal because when we were talking about dollar stores last week, Dan, remember somebody mentioned, yeah, Malto Meal is a dollar store. It's awesome. specifically mentioning Malto Meal by name. So that product still exists. Rich, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Eagle Man for the Eagle Man Insurance was weird. Those are local, the classic local one. I've got something for you. 269 area code. 815 area code says the Flintstone Smoking Winstons. We've played that many, many times. Robert says, as far as creepy goes, no one is creepier than the puppy monkey baby from Mountain Dew. I love that thing. Dan, do you like the puppy monkey baby?
I do not.
Does it freak you out?
It does.
I think I like all the weird stuff except for the damn tree. I don't know why the StubHub tree, you know, creeps me out, but I like the Sponge Monkeys. I love the Burger King. I like the puppy monkey baby. Hey, have you seen the commercial with the two guys who live in the freezing cold house, and they have a snowman in their living room named Steve? Have you seen this one?
No, I have not.
So they come home. These guys, they're young dudes, you know, like bros, and they come in and they've got scarves and hats on because they live inside the house. They're snowed inside the house. It's really freezing. And so the guy comes in. One of the guys has the fire Doritos, like the, you know, the hot flaming fire Doritos. And they come in, they're setting up. They're gonna play video games. So they're getting their Xbox or whatever it is set up, and they're sitting on the couch. And he drops the bag of Doritos. And when they come in, Steve, they're talking snowman. Hey, how's it going, guys? How's it going? And they're like, we got you a bag of ice. So they pour a bag of ice, you know, around Steve to keep him nice and cold. And then they sit down. They're about to play the video game, and Steve the snowman takes his little, you know, his tree limb arm. Reaches over and grabs a Doritos chip from the table, and then goes crunch, and all of a sudden he goes, and he starts to melt. He starts to melt because it's so hot. And as he's melting and completely disappearing, they're like, no, Steve, no. And he's like melting away. As he's melting away, he goes, worth it. all right, well, let's take a break here. And we'll come back. You've not seen that one, huh? Steve the Snowman?
No, I have not.
And the hot Doritos? It's very worth it. That's the best part of it. All right. Let's break here for the news. And then when we come back, talk more about the weirdest commercials, the weirdest mascots, and your thoughts on that. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m., opening bell coming up at 5 o'clock, and Steve Cochran at 6773 area code requesting for our last two for Tuesday requests. Two for Tuesday. That would be Leon Bridges with Coming Home. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about weird commercials and creepy mascots in commercials. Yeah. So, you know who's, you know, Dan, you know who I think is the creepiest thing on commercials right now?
Who's that?
Ray Liotta.
That's, yes.
For the Chantix commercials. Doesn't he seem like he's just, like, been drugged or something? He looks weird, and I don't know, is that his real wife in the commercials? And I always find that kind of weird. You know, when they have, like, a celebrity being a celebrity and then, like, have an actor or actress play their significant other. Remember when Ditka did those chunky soup commercials and they had an actress play his wife and it wasn't really his wife? And people were like, went, wait a minute, that's not Ditka's wife, but he's Ditka in the commercial. It's not like Mike Ditka is portraying some, you know, unknown guy who just wants some soup in the middle of the night. He's playing Mike Ditka. And Mike Ditka wants soup, but it's not Mike Ditka's wife who wakes up in the middle of the night and says, "What are you doing?" So I don't even know if that's Ray Liotta's wife in the. I mean, I don't know who Ray Liotta's married to or if he's married, but like he's like doing, you know, like he's having dinner and making salads and stuff and reading scripts. I'm Ray Liotta. I quit smoking with Chantix. There are no side effects at all. I'm fine. I remember the first time I saw a commercial. What the hell happened to Ray Liotta? This is the toll from working with Jennifer Lopez? Is that what happens?
I'm Ray Liotta. And I'm fine. I'm totally fine. I quit smoking. Where's my living room? Why am I holding lettuce? What's happening here? I don't even like cherry tomatoes. What am I doing? Who's this woman? Whose kitchen is this? Whose child is that? I need a cigarette.
That's Ray Liotta. All right, here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning, Nick. Couple things. First, on the Ray Liotta commercials, I keep expecting to see Joe Pesci come out of the other room.
Yeah.
But the commercial I find kind of creepy, it's for an irritable bowel syndrome prescription medicine.
Yeah.
Where the woman's with her doctor, and she's got the bowel lady behind her in the onesie.
Yeah.
That one's kind of bizarre.
Yeah. I've seen that one. Yeah, I know. A lot of these, you know, now we're getting into, like, the whole prescription med commercials are just ridiculous anyway. You know what I mean? Most of them, I mean, it you know, if it's a one-minute commercial, 45 seconds is what's going to happen when you take the pill and you might die. It's all the side effects that they list off.
As I hang up and wish you guys a good day, you might have talked about it already, but I find the two guys for Sonic kind of creepy as well.
Oh, do you? Oh, I like those guys.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Chris. Yeah. Thanks.
Have a great night.
Okay. I love those Sonic commercials. Have you seen the ones now with Jane Krakowski and Ellie Kemper? Funny. Yeah, no, these prescription ones, you know, the what he's talking about. Do you ever see the one where it's a prescription for if you have a weak bladder and you have to go to the bathroom all the time? The little animated bladder that's like, hey,
oh yeah,
I think that animated bladder is adorable. I think that it's the most adorable bladder I've ever seen. I love the animated bladder. I think he's adorable. Like, you know, when she's trying to bowl and then he's on the lane with her pulling her and going, no, you can't bowl right now because you have to pee. I'm a bladder. And then like, but I think the bladder himself is adorable. Yeah. But those prescription drug commercials, man, oh, wait a minute. Here's one. Oh, God, I just thought of this one. Dan, this is what, it's a dry skin eczema commercial where this woman's got like I think it's eczema, but she's got like a skin condition that causes her to scratch like crazy. That would be eczema, right? I mean, I'm sure there are other conditions that have a different name, but I think that's what this is for. But they illustrate the skin thing with having like hair pop out of her. Have you seen this commercial?
No.
Like hair appear out of her skin, and then like in her on her neck, and and she's like washing her hands, and as she's washing her hands, this stuff starts to appear on her, and it's animated stuff. It's not like the actual condition looks like in real life. It's like what it's supposed to feel like. So like these needle things are popping out of this woman's skin. It's really creepy. And I see it in here all the time on the damn screen. It's on, they show it on the commercial. They show that's one of those late night commercials. Like 4 o'clock in the morning, they show that and you're like, what the hell's going on with that woman's arms? It's really creepy. I don't know. Maybe 312-981-7200 for talk or text if you guys know what I'm talking about. It's this skin condition. It's a prescription drug commercial about a skin condition, and it illustrates the skin condition by creepily having like needles and things stick out of a woman's arm as she scratches it. And it's just so creepy. I can't believe I didn't think of that one like immediately. That's the latest one, and they show it a lot on overnight. So I'll be sitting here just minding my own business in the studio, and then I look up and I see that image, and I'm like, oh, man. Here is Brandon on WGN. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, how's it going? Good morning.
Morning.
You guys remember the old Moonoise commercial? Where one
guy sure.
dressed as a pig and the other as a cow, and there's this guy staring at the camera throwing meat in a bag and everything, and they're rapping in the background.
Oh, yeah, the Moo and Oink. Moo and Oink is classic.
Yeah, definitely classic.
They're classic. Yeah, no question about it.
I grew up in the 90s, so one thing that always sticks in my head, too, is the Rice-A-Roni commercial, the San Franciscan treat.
Oh, San Francisco treat. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. Yeah. All right, Brandon, thanks.
Good morning.
Moon oink. By the way, we were talking about how sometimes it's a bummer if your birthday is close to Christmas or on Christmas. Somebody texted in 773, my son's birthday is Christmas. He gets gifts the week before and on Christmas. We have a cake for his birthday celebration, and any gift for his birthday is given during cake separate from the Christmas presents that are opened up. So they do take the effort to separate the two. All right, here's Randy on WGN. Hey, Randy.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I know that commercial you're talking about with the lady, she's washing her hands in the soap, and the soap turns to ants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Just makes you want to just shake your hands all over the place.
I know. Isn't it crazy? I mean, it's like the creepiest thing ever. I, you know?
Yeah, and it shows the vines going up. She puts her slippers on, and the vines come up out of her shoes and start wrapping around her legs.
That's right. Oh, that's another part of that commercial. Man, I don't know who's responsible for that commercial, but they've successfully made it one of the creepiest things I've ever seen.
That's very true. And also, my birthday is on December 30th.
Oh, well, have a happy birthday, Randy.
Thank you, sir. And I enjoy your show. You bring me to work every morning.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks, man. Happy holidays, okay?
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye. It's. I'll tell you, that commercial, the skin commercial, it is so creepy. I mean, it's very hard to describe, but it's really insanely creepy. And if the idea is to make your skin crawl, then they do. It works. So, I don't know. Anyway, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. There's some of the other creepy ones that are getting mentioned here. We've got the Mac Tonight. Do you remember Mac Tonight? Does anybody remember Mac Tonight from McDonald's? He was like, he was a quarter moon face. He was a dude that his face looked like it was a quarter moon, and he played the piano and he sang Mac Tonight. As to the tune of Mac the Knife, but he was a weird looking dude, like a moon face. He had like the. Do you remember Mac Tonight, Dan?
I do not.
He's a creepy. He was a McDonald's mascot, and he had like a suit, and he was like a regular, if I remember correctly, regular human body, and he played the piano, but his head was a giant quarter moon. I'm not sure what the logic was. Anyway, Max Headroom for Coca-Cola, and then Max Headroom would go on to have his own show, which was that Max Headroom TV show that was on ABC, that was a terrific show, like a really like serious sci-fi show, like with a really great production values. And it wasn't just Max Headroom. There were a lot of other characters and a lot of sort of sci-fi, really cool sci-fi adventures and stuff. How about the new Hamburglar who's not animated? The dude in the Hamburglar suit? Like, that's not too creepy, right? It's not an animated dude. It's not a guy in a costume. It's not a mascot costume. It's a dude dressed up like the Hamburglar with like human features. He's not in a mascot costume. It's wrong, and he's got a weird look on his face. Ugh. And here's Bill on WGN. Hey, Bill. Are you there, Bill?
This is Juan.
Oh, Juan. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, man, I listen to your radio show every day on the way to work.
I appreciate
it. One of the weirdest commercials for me was that, if you remember, Victory Auto Records, this guy just standing in front of a green old car and keeps pulling the door.
Yep.
That falls off all the time, and he keeps running.
It's
right up in the middle of the night. There's a damn guy. Oh, sorry, I swore.
No, I was going to say, it's the same guy. That's been the same commercial for like 30 years. 30, 35 years, that commercial, the Victory Auto Records commercial. It's a classic. Dean Richards now does the voiceover for it when you see it on TV. And he does the voiceover because we have commercials we play here on the show, audio commercials of them on the show. I had that dude on, the guy who opens up the door and the door falls off the car. I mean, we all know it. We all seen that commercial a million times. That guy got paid like $20 to do it, and they've run that commercial now for 40 years, and he's not seen a dime extra. And he just came to work that morning. He was a truck driver. He was one of the guys that towed the cars away, that took the cars away. He showed up at work at Victory Auto Wreckers one morning, and they're like, hey, we're shooting a commercial. You're going to be in it. So that fantastic big leather strap that he has on his wrist and the clothes that he's wearing and the bell bottoms, that was the clothes. Those were the clothes he wore to work that morning. So that was that guy's personal wardrobe. He was not a happy dude when I had him on. I had him on like for the 30th anniversary of the commercial or something like that. But yeah, no, it's a legendary commercial. Legendary. I'm sure it's running right now somewhere. So, all right, let's break for the weather and we'll come back and wrap all this up. Welcome back, everybody. And we are closing out on 2 for Tuesday. We'll do it again next week. 312-981-7200-773 area code. Another Leon Bridges song. That's Better Man. Right here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. Opening bell coming up at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, we've been having some fun here talking about ridiculous commercials and weird commercials and that creepy skin commercial. and Ray Liotta. I am Ray Liotta. I'm perfectly fine. I have no side effects whatsoever. I can't tie my shoes anymore, but it's okay. I have loafers. I don't know who this woman is. Is she my wife? I need a cigarette. Keith in Kansas says, I always wanted the medallion that had the Burger King logo on it that he was wearing. I'm sure that they would probably sell it, right? You know, I mean, any commercialization that you would get out of that, you know? Squat says Energizer batteries and Jacko the Australian football player. So the Energizer bunny, is that what he's talking about?
No, I mean, apparently this is from 1987.
So it's a, wait, there's Jacko the Australian football player is
the mascot.
The mascot for Energizer? So what's
the longest lasting battery you can buy?
Laboratory test proof, and most devices Energizer last longer than any other battery.
I don't remember. I have no memory of that. Do you remember that at all?
I had to look it up, but a few people texted it in.
Really? Jacko, the Australian football player for Energizer batteries.
And it was one of those, it seems like he was an actual football player.
I have no memory of that.
Football, and they recruited him for the commercial.
No memory of that whatsoever. How about the Skittles commercial where they milk a giraffe? Yeah. You know which one I can't stand, the Skittles commercial I can't stand? It's the Skittles pox. You know which one that one is?
Sure.
You look so sad, Jimmy. What's wrong? Doctor says I have Skittles pox, and then she pops one off, bites it, and then she's got them. Is it contagious? I don't think so. I don't understand that. 815 area code says, I like the commercial, but the premise of the Tidy Bowl man in a motorboat in your toilet is weird. Yeah, the Tidy Bowl man was a weird guy. And the Tidy Bowl man was around for years. Like, that was a real popular TV commercial and pitch, man. Floating around in your toilet. 847 area code, Robert Loggia in that OJ commercial was weird. That's one of the greatest commercials of all time. That is really one of the greatest commercials of all time. I swear to you, my first ex-wife and I were watching TV, and that commercial came on, and I was like, this is the, we laughed our asses off during that.
Try some new Minute Maid orange tangerine. It's got calcium.
Then I'm not drinking it.
Oh, no, it's sweet. You'll like it.
I don't believe you.
Well, then who would you believe?
I don't know, Robert Loggia. Whoa, Robert Loggia.
Billy, your mother's right. New Minute Maid orange tangerine tastes great. It's got as much calcium as milk.
If you say so, Mr. Loggia.
Yeah.
This is great.
Enjoy your breakfast.
New Minute Maid orange tangerine.
It's the best. How random is that? I don't know, Robert Loggia? And then Loggia busts through the door. It's the greatest. I don't know who wrote that commercial, but God bless them. That is fantastic. Have you mentioned The General yet? It's hilarious. What is it? You can call the general to save some time. I can't stand the Liberty Mutual insurance commercials. Liberty, 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 Liberty. But I do love the Geico commercials and your show. Oh, thank you. That's sweet. Yeah, the Geico commercials, I got to say, those are consistently funny. Whatever ad agency that they're using for the Geico commercials, they're good. They're funny, funny stuff. 815 area code, the singing Amazon boxes are creepy. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? I actually kind of, you know which one I like is the one that the little girl's in the bedroom and it's going, can you feel it? And the girl goes, shh, to the Amazon box. 815 area code says, I have an action figure of that McDonald's moon guy. Oh, wow, Mac Tonight. You have a Mac Tonight action figure? Pretty memorable looking dude. Have you looked him up, Dan?
Yeah, now that I see him, I kind of remember.
You kind of remember it, yeah. He was floating around in the sky and stuff, like with a piano and singing.
And I think that action figure came with a Happy Meal, so I may have owned that.
You may have had one of those?
Yep.
Wow. All right, well, that was fun. Except it was fun for everybody except Ray Liotta, who I don't think is capable of having fun anymore. I don't think it's possible for Ray Liotta to have any more fun. Because I think he's having the most fun in the commercial, and he's still going, I don't want any lettuce. I'll just sit in the corner. No side effects. I'm Ray Liotta. I need a cigarette. All right, we're going to break. Hey, we got a pretty good guest tomorrow. His name happens to be Robert Zemeckis, director of such classics as Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Back to the Future trilogies, and the new one, Welcome to Marwen. We'll talk to him tomorrow morning. All right, the news is up next.